All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
Oh. Right, all right, all right. Hi, good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning, here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. It's Wednesday. That means Wild Card Wednesday. You mean Wild Card Wednesday? It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Request now, play them later, 312-981-7200. Hey, coming up after the 1:30 news, Edward McClelland, who goes by Ted as well, Ted McClelland, he's the author of a book called Folk Tales and Legends of the Middle West. And we love to tell these sort of legendary folk tales and kind of scary stories right around this time. It's always fun, right around Halloween, to talk about these things. And this is all about Midwest folk tales and legends. Including some, you know, classic stories. Locally right here, Resurrection Mary is featured in the book, and we all know who Resurrection Mary is. But there's tons of other stuff here that we're going to be talking about, and Ted will join us after the 1:30 news. But we are going to be talking about this, you know, on this date in history, War of the Worlds was broadcast. Orson Welles broadcast the radio play War of the Worlds, and it freaked everybody out because everybody thought it was real. So we'll talk about that. We got some legendary monsters of North America we're going to jump into. Most popular Halloween costumes for the year that you were born. We got Halloween hoaxes to talk about. And childhood movie scenes that scarred you for life. They don't necessarily have to be from a horror movie. But, like, you see a movie when you're a kid, and there's a scene in it that's it. It freaks you out, scars you for life. We're going to talk a little bit about that, too. And we just found out, maybe 15 minutes ago, John Witherspoon passed away. And we're going to talk about him and pay tribute to him. People who might not know who John Witherspoon is, he was a stand-up comedian, incredibly funny guy. He was 77, he passed away. A lot of people remember him from the Chris Tucker Ice Cube films, the Friday movies. He was in that. He was in Boomerang. A ton of stuff. And just one of the funniest guys ever. And we just found out he passed away like literally 15 minutes ago. And I'm completely bummed because I love the guy. And he was so, so funny. So we'll pay tribute to him as well. So all of that stuff is coming up. You can call us at 312-981-7200 anytime. Text us as well to be a part of the show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. And download our podcasts. Subscribe to our podcasts. Every single second of every show is podcast. Lots of people listen via podcast, and we thank you for that. It's easy to do. It's free. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe. They'll automatically show up to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's what's coming up on the show. My producer is Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. A little bummed about John Witherspoon.
Yeah, yeah. I always loved him in the Friday movies. Loved him as the grandpa in The Boondocks.
Yeah.
Anybody watched that show?
Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah. He was hilarious. His stand-up was great. I love him in Boomerang. He kills me in that movie. But he was really one of the funniest guys, man. And, yeah, so he was only 77 when he passed, and so we'll talk about him coming up. Oh, we have a Blackhawks Express That was really the most pathetic game I've seen them play. And this comes after the best game they played all season so far. They followed up with that mess last night, and it was an absolute mess. But we always play the Express the day after a game, so the Blackhawks Express will be coming up a little bit later on as well. Let's go into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Just fine.
Were you able to avoid the Hawks game?
Yeah, I didn't get to watch any of the Hawks game.
You didn't miss anything.
Yeah. I was aware of the score as I was walking into the building. I was checking it through the park. Yeah.
Awful.
And then, like you said, after a great game, too.
The best game of the season. They played the best game of the season. And
wow. That's not a great start to the to the road trip.
51 shots on goal.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of... I used to have a theory that only one Chicago sports team is allowed to be good at any given time.
Uh-huh.
But I guess that theory has been reduced to no Chicago sports teams are allowed to be good at any given time.
Well, we're still early in the season. It's still just October. But they got to get it together, man. They truly have to get it together.
Just tighten up.
Yeah. Kane's not producing that much. Taves is in a slump. Yeah, there was no defense last night at all. But anyway, we'll play that back. That was a very disappointing game, especially coming after, you know, such a great game a couple of days ago. So, all right. They play again on Saturday, and they're in L.A. on Saturday. And we will, of course, have it here on WGN. I'm not going to stop watching.
No, you got to.
Or rooting. But, of course, I'm not going to be. Boy, how about this? We're going to a Game 7. World Series, yeah, going to a Game 7, man. Nobody expected that. So Dave Martinez went nuts last night.
Absolutely.
And this was during the seventh inning stretch. After a terrible call at first base, he went nuts, and he got ejected. So that was fun to watch. But, yeah, games, you got to love a Game 7, man, in any sport.
Mm-hmm. And well, especially when you got the Nats in there. It's their first go.
Yeah.
You know, I'm rooting for him, honestly.
Well, me too.
Nothing against the Astros. I'm really no dog in the fight other than I love an underdog story.
Right. But yeah, no, it's fun. Game sevens are always a lot of fun. That's tomorrow night. Yeah, tomorrow night. Okay. All right. So
tonight.
Is it tonight?
Yeah, tonight.
Oh, it's tonight.
Yeah, later tonight.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go. I didn't know it was on tonight.
Technically.
So that means no Masked Singer. Masked Singer will be preempted. Oh, man. That's 2 weeks without the Masked Singer. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Are you starting to get like a rash?
I'm sitting very upset now. Oh, man. I can't go 2 weeks without a Masked Singer episode.
Just building hype at this point.
Oh,
building anticipation.
Yeah, I love that show. The stupidest show on TV, and I love it. All right. Okay, well, so listen. I know that Carm talked about this, mentioned it, but I have to mention it too. So somebody decided to change the ABC's song, the alphabet song. And so we're going to talk about that, and we'll hear it too. We'll play it. We'll play the back. Vic, have you heard about this?
No.
Oh, you haven't heard about this? They changed. You know, everybody knows the ABC's song, the alphabet song. Well, someone changed it, and we'll talk about that. You don't mess with it, though. You shouldn't mess with that song. So I got the whole story here. We'll play it back. And talk a little bit about that. And then again, after the 1:30 news, we'll be talking about some folktales and some legends of the Middle West with Edward McClelland. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about the changes to the ABC's song. Right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock on this Wednesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We would love to hear from you. And coming up after the 1:30 news, Edward McClelland, Ted McClelland, is going to join us. He is the author of Folk Tales and Legends of the Middle West. And we'll talk about that really cool book. Yeah. So everybody knows the alphabet song, you know, the ABCs song. Here's a little story about it. Reboots, revivals, and remixes may be all the rage these days, but some things are sacred and just don't require a do-over. That's the overwhelming message circling on social media after an alternative version of the ultimate toddler tune went viral. So let's actually hear it. We have the song, correct, Tom?
Yeah, we've got a little bit of this courtesy of the Today Show.
All right, here we go.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
No. Okay. So, no. That is absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. That's the revamped take of the beloved alphabet song from ABC to XYZ, but pay close attention to the LMNOP part. And the classic ABC song set to the music of Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, the string of letters situated between K and Q are sung faster than the others, so they'll fit in a single measure. It adds a bit of flair to the otherwise simple structure of the piece, making the group of letters almost sound like a single entry, like LMNOP. But in a track created by Dream English, an educational music website for kids, those letters don't run together at all, making it downright completely different. Though this version of the song was released in 2012, somehow it gained new life and fresh outrage when comedian and television writer Noah Garfinkel shared it on Twitter last week. I did not hear this in 2012. I was not aware of this. Were you?
No, I definitely was not.
They changed the ABC song to clarify the LMNOP part, and it's life-ruining, he wrote. That sentiment earned Garfinkel more than 100,000 likes and a whole lot of agreement in the form of GIFs, memes, and a pure alphabet snark. While Dream English's ABC makeover united the internet by making people mad, that was never the intention. In fact, the man behind the music, who simply goes by Matt R., explained that the changes he made in the description that accompanied the clip on YouTube. About the slow LMNOP, I teach young learners of English as a foreign language and have found that it's most effective for teaching the letters. Maybe there's room for more than one take on the alphabet song after all. No.
Well, it wouldn't have been as bad if they didn't use Twinkle Twinkle Little Star still. Like, it, for the most part of that song, is still using the same melody.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous.
If you had done a completely new melody that where the letters might have been said slower, sure, then it's just a completely different song and
right.
Whatever, it is what it is.
Oh, man. People are outraged. Outraged, Tom.
There's riots.
People are going nuts. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, man.
Hey.
Long time no speak. All right, let me see. We can go back to Sesame Street. All right. You got A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, and Z. And Z, if you're in Canada. Anyway, then you have Alphabet Chat. Remember Alphabet Chat? With the dude, he's all in a library, and he's like, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, L, M, N, O, P. And then he would pick a letter, okay? And then you've got this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, which I believe was Quincy Jones' action, actually wrote that. This is ridiculous. I mean, I don't even know why this is a topic.
Well,
this is literally dumbing down of America.
Well, this was apparently recorded in 2012. Nobody knew about it, and so this comedian found it. So it was just under the radar. You know, I find that hilarious that this thing is like like 7 years old.
Yeah.
You know?
And now everyone's like, hold up.
Yeah.
Hold up a minute.
Yeah. Well, I agree with Chris. Chris, thanks for the call. I agree. It's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. And I know that they were like, well, you know, it's confusing for people who speak a foreign language who are trying to learn, you know, English or the alphabet in English when they get to the LMNOP part. But, you know, okay, I guess that makes sense, but it's just a song. You know,
you can sing it slower.
You can sing it slower. You don't have to sing it. You know what I mean? You know, it's not, you don't have, if you don't want to sing the alphabet song, don't sing it. If it's confusing or if, you know, if you find it confusing, I don't know, but you can't mess with the alphabet song. You can't do it. It's just, you can't. There are things that are sacred and the ABC song is sacred. So play it one more time, because it is so off-putting when you get to the LMNOP part. It's just so weird and wrong. Like, it just sounds, it's just like my ears just, you know, like my whole body just goes, ugh, like it's like I clench up. Here we go.
E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O,
no.
B, Q, R, S, T, U. V, W, X, Y, Z.
That's terrible.
My brain is on fire.
No, it's nuts. It's completely nuts. Oh, man. I would like to thank Noah Garfinkel, who I've never seen before. He's a comedian and a television writer. Do you know who Noah Garfinkel is?
It does not ring a bell.
Does he have credit? Can you look him up?
Yeah, he's got credits for Kroll Show, Workaholics,
oh.
New Girl, Single Parents, unfortunately, Abby's,
oh.
Just a terrible show. Yeah. But the rest of those shows are great.
So he's done good work. He's a funny guy. And I wonder how he found this. If this thing is like, you know, if this thing is over 7 years old, he must have been looking for it, and he must have dug around and found it. But it's just so weird. When you hear it, it's like, ugh. I mean, this is a song that we've all known for our entire lives. So, but anyway, it's all the rage on the internet. People are going nuts on the internet. And it only took 7 years to make a dent in the world right now. But this is just wrong. It's completely wrong. So, Noah Garfinkel uncovered this, shared it on Twitter last week, and now people are going crazy, as well they should. So, anyway, don't mess with the ABC song. Wonder what the people at Sesame Street think.
Big Bird's going to be showing up to this dude's house.
Yeah.
He's going to give him the shakedown.
Oscar's going to be grouchier than ever. Yeah. I don't know what, you know... I wonder what teachers think. Maybe teachers think, well, you know, maybe it is easier for little kids or other people to that stretch of the song that seems to be confusing. I don't know. It didn't seem confusing to me when I was growing up, especially if you've got a visual with it. You know, like if you listen to the song, okay, maybe that's one thing. But if you got a visual element, most of the time there is a visual element to it, like you watch a video of it or you look at the alphabet.
Yeah, because you need to put the sound,
what they
to
look
the
like
letter,
to, yeah, you know, the letters to the sound. So I was never very confused by it. I don't know,
but then again, I mean, to me, it's 5-year-olds are capable of learning a whole lot, or even younger. I don't know what age I learned the alphabet. What is the average age that a child learns the alphabet?
Well, pretty young.
Pretty young.
Yeah,
but I guess again, the argument that someone who has already learned another language and might have learned a different song or learned it a different way, if they all of a sudden have to learn this kind of other thing, it might be a little confusing, but kids are pretty smart, I find.
Yeah, I know, absolutely.
They can figure it out.
Yeah. So stupid. So stupid. All right. Well, don't listen to that. Everybody keep the ABC song the way it is. Keep singing it like that. LMNOP.
As Dylan Moran once said, the way it is the way it is, because if it weren't, it wouldn't be the way it is.
Well, there you go. There's some wisdom right there. All right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up, and then Edward McClelland is going to join us to talk about folktales and legends of the Middle West.
On a wild Chicago night, with a wind howling light, I caught my first sight, a resurrection Mary.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday morning. That means Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, anything. Get your requests in. We're going to talk about some legendary monsters of North America. Got some Halloween hoaxes that we're going to get into. What was the most popular Halloween costume in the year you were born? And then childhood movie scenes that scarred people for life. Just those, just scenes. They don't have to necessarily be from horror movies, but just scenes from movies that just, And then we're going to celebrate the Today in History, War of the Worlds radio broadcast freaked everybody out. So we'll talk a little bit about that. That's all coming up on the show. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. And we would like to welcome now to the show. We love to talk about this time of year. We love to talk about, you know, like you just heard the song about Resurrection Mary. That's one of our favorite stories, one of our favorite ghost stories and legends in the Chicago area, of which there are plenty. But there's also a bunch of folktales and legends of the Middle West. And in fact, there's a book called Folktales and Legends of the Middle West. Edward McClelland is the author. And he goes by Ted, so we're going to call him Ted. And he's been on the show before. How to Talk Midwestern was the last time he was here. But now we're going to talk about some of these great sort of folk tales and legends. Let's welcome Ted back to the show. Ted, welcome back, man.
Hey, great to be back. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you too, man. So how did this book come about, man?
Well, I kind of wanted to do something where sort of an oral tradition, oral history book, and you know, I've done a couple programs where I told stories and I had a musician singing songs that went along with the stories, and I guess I wanted to also write a history of the Midwest through folk tales and legends, you know, from the days of the, you know, the Potawatomi and the Ojibwe all up through the industrial era. So I've got stories about, you know, how turtle helped create the world. And I have stories about Nanobozo, who inspired the Hiawatha story. And then it goes all the way up to the modern day, where you have people like Joe Magarac, who is sort of a golem of the steel mills, and the Lake Erie Monster, who was created by pollution seeping out of the Cuyahoga River.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I love these old folk tales and things like that. I mean, they just go, they get passed down from generation to generation. How did you, when you gathered these, well, first of all, how did you choose the ones that you put in the book?
Well, I wanted to, you know, cover the sweep of history. You know, I started with the creation of the world. So, you know, I wanted to cover all the different states, different ethnic groups. I mean, there were some that were really obvious. Obviously, you know, there are Paul Bunyan stories in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a story about the Underground Railroad. You know, they're trying to get from Alabama to Cairo, Illinois, because that's where freedom is. So I have Mike Fink. He might not be as well known, but he was there was a Walt Disney movie. Davy Crockett and the River Pirates.
Mm.
And Mike Fink was a character. He was a keelboatman, a legendary keelboatman on the Ohio River. And they filmed it in Illinois. They filmed it at Cavern Rock, Illinois, because that's where pirates supposedly hid out.
Yeah.
I think they actually did hide out in that cave. And Mike Fink took on the pirates and evicted them from their cave.
Oh, okay. So you got you covered the gamut in this.
In
this one. Yeah. Now, when you're talking about these stories that have been sort of passed down and retold over generation to generation, how did you distill them from, because, you know, sometimes people will tell these stories and they'll change details or they'll change, you know, names or facts or anything like that. In doing research, I'm sure that, like, these tales have been told. How did you get them to you know, how did you distill them to make sure that it was as accurate as possible?
Well, I wasn't really going for accuracy. I think I talked in the, I mean, because most of these are legendary anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, so nobody knows the real story. You know, I think I talked in the book about the difference between the facts and the truth.
Right.
So I try to get at the truth, because really for most of these there are no facts. So and I try to tell them all in a narrative way, in a storytelling way. You know, it's not really an academic book about mythology and folklore.
Yeah.
I mean, another one that a lot of people might be familiar with is the Hodag. Have you heard of the Hodag?
Yeah, I have. Well, let's talk about that. You know, the Hodag is our neighbors in the north here.
Right.
Know about this? Let's tell everybody about the Hodag.
Well, it's in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, and supposedly, you know, this was in the North Woods, and supposedly the Hodag was appeared after an ox that pulled logs had been burned for 7 years, and you know, a Hodag was, you know, the most fearsome creature in the North Woods. It had, you know, spines along its back like a dinosaur. It had huge fangs, and this story is about a guy who wants to capture a Hodag to display at the county fair. And supposedly he does capture a Hodag, but it escapes. So he has a friend carve his own Hodag and kind of puts it behind a curtain and has his sons shake it and make big growling sounds and charges people a dime to see it. But you know, if you go to Rhinelander, there's a Hodag statue in front of the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
The sports teams are called the Hodags. They have the Hodag Country Festival. They have Hodag Oil Change. So this is, you know, supposedly a mythological creature, but you know, it really exists in the life of this town.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, they've totally embraced it up there. Totally embraced it, and I think it's fantastic. We talked about the Hodag before. I've had people from that town, you know, talk about it before. But it's such a great legend, and I love the statue, and I love the thing looks terrifying though.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, so you've been up there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess we can get on to talking about Resurrection Mary, but that, in a way, has become a reality. Because have you heard of a bar called Chet's Musical Lounge?
Chet's?
Yes. It's right across the street from Resurrection Cemetery.
Oh, no.
Every Sunday, they leave a Bloody Mary on the bar for Resurrection Mary to drink. I went in there on a Sunday, and there it was.
There it is. They leave it out there.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I mean, you know, Resurrection Mary is such a legendary ghost story here in the Chicagoland area. And, you know, in the overnight hours, dating back to Chicago Eddie Schwartz on this station, and Steve and Johnny, and anybody who's worked the overnight hours has at this time of year loves to talk about Resurrection Mary. For people who don't, maybe you've not heard about it, it's a legendary story. What is Resurrection Mary, and what happens to the people who drive past Resurrection Cemetery?
Well, it's kind of a variation of a story that actually appears in a lot of places. It's called the Vanishing Hitchhiker story.
Right.
And, you know, Resurrection Mary was a young woman who supposedly died in an auto accident. She worked at the Brox Candy Factory. She went out with some guys, and they crashed into a pillar of the L. And a guy goes to, there used to be the O. Henry Ballroom. That's where all the big bands would play.
Mm-hmm.
out on Archer Avenue. Out in Justice. So a guy goes there to the O. Henry Ballroom, sees an attractive young woman, starts dancing with her, kind of notices her hands are kind of cold, and you know, that he offers her a ride home. And when they get to the Resurrection Cemetery, she asks him to pull over, and she says, "I have to go out and you can't follow me." And then she walks to the gates and lays a hand on the iron chain that bound them together and vanishes. Now, she'd given him an address where she wanted to be taken home to. So the next day, he goes to the house. Woman answers the door, and he asks if Mary's home. And she says, well, Mary doesn't live here anymore. Mary died in a car accident 4 years ago. And so he realizes that he's danced with a ghost.
Mm.
So he never goes back to the ballroom again. But and once the big band era ends, Mary stops showing up at the O. Henry Ballroom because that was the music she liked to dance to. But she was buried in a term grave, which was a rented plot which only held remains for a quarter century. And when the term expired, she was moved to another corner of the cemetery, and supposedly that revived her ghost. So the Justice Police got a report of a woman in a white dress walking through the grounds of Resurrection Cemetery. When they arrived at the gates, they found two bars pried open with scorch marks where a pair of hands would have gripped them.
Mm-hmm.
A couple was driving down Archer Avenue, and they saw a girl wearing a white dress lying in the street, and then and the man at the wheel swerved to avoid her, but she disappeared before his tires could make contact. And there was one of these ghost shows where there was a guy, and I gotta say, I think I kind of based the story in the book on this. There was a guy who talked, an older guy who talked about supposedly how he had danced with Resurrection Mary back in the 30s or the 40s.
Right.
So I know there are some Chicago ghost tours, and one of them goes down to Chet's Musical Lounge,
mm-hmm,
and to Resurrection Cemetery and covers Resurrection Mary. So that's the only real Chicago-based story in my book.
Right.
And it's definitely, as you say, the most famous Chicago ghost story.
Oh, yeah. No, it's legendary. And, of course, you know, the whole thing about, like, some guys, like, pick her up. She gets in the back seat of the car, and then she disappears. And
right.
It just goes on forever. All right, listen, Ted, hang on, okay, man?
Okay.
All right. Ted McClelland is with us. Edward McClelland, he's billed as, and the book is called Folk Tales and Legends of the Middle West. And we'll get back to some more of these legendary stories and folk tales right here on 720 WG.
The wind and the wires made a tattletale sound, and the wave broke over the railing. And every man knew, as the captain did too, 'twas the witch of November come stealing.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We're live in the Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. Wildcard Wednesday will be coming up. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We are also going to talk about some Halloween costumes that were popular when you were born. We've got some legendary monsters of North America, Halloween hoaxes. And War of the Worlds, the radio broadcast, took place on this date years ago and freaked everybody out. And we'll talk a little bit about that event. Right now, Edward McClelland is my guest. He is the author of Folk Tales and Legends of the Middle West, which covers all these really great stories and folk tales in the Midwest area. And we're welcoming Ted back to the show. Ted, welcome back.
Hey, great. You're playing the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Right.
Fitz Day's coming up. That's our next big holiday after Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's always the second week of November is always the craziest week of the year on the Great Lakes, because that's when the cold air from Canada collides with the warm air from the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
And so that's when the Fitz sank.
Yeah, it's another legendary story we got here. So what was it? Have you always been interested in these kind of folk tales and stuff?
Oh yeah, for sure. And I do have a Great Lakes story, a Great Lakes shipwreck story.
Okay.
About the Griffin, which was the first shipwreck on the Great Lakes, and it was built by LaSalle. You know, we all know LaSalle from the street. And it disappeared on its maiden voyage, and supposedly it still appears to rookie sailors on their first voyage. You know, a ship with tattered sails and peeling paint. I think it last appeared maybe around in the 1950s.
Okay.
And well, so yeah, I've always been interested in folk tales. I mean, I've always collected stories like this. So, I mean, I think a lot of these I already knew about even before I started the book. A few, I guess, I discovered in my research.
Yeah.
But let's see.
Yeah, tell us about the Nain Rogue, the demon that haunts Detroit.
Oh, Nain Rouge. Every year there is a parade in Detroit to get rid of the Nain Rouge. And let me just get to that one.
Yeah, so what's the Nain Rouge all about?
He was supposedly a demon who stowed away on a ship from Normandy, and Cadillac. You know, we remember him for the car.
Sure,
but you know he was the founder of Detroit, and when he was on his way to, you know, he got a royal grant. And when he was on his way, he stopped in Quebec City and had dinner with the governor, and a fortune teller told him to beware. She said, "You must check your pride and ambition, and you must appease the Nain Rouge." But, you know, he's this arrogant Frenchman. And when he sees the Nain Rouge actually coming down the riverbank, he hits him with a cane.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nain Rouge then puts a curse on Detroit. So that's the reason so many terrible things have supposedly happened in Detroit.
Huh.
You know, there was a massacre, an Indian massacre in 1763, and the fire in 1805. And there was the city was sacked by the British in 1812. Of course, there was a riot mm-hmm. in 1967. And, you know, this year the Tigers lost 114 games.
Right.
And people blame it all on the Nain Rouge.
Right.
So there's this march. It's the first Sunday after the vernal equinox every year. And people wear masks so that the Nain Rouge won't recognize them. And they ride on Mardi Gras style floats. And they try to sing and dance away the curse. So, but apparently Detroit is still under this curse, the oldest curse in North America.
Wow! And the parade, they still do the parade. They still dress up and do the whole thing.
Oh yeah. I have a friend who goes there every year. Who lives in Detroit?
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's a great one. That's a good one. All right. Well, tell us about the Bessie, the Lake Erie monster.
Okay. All right, Bessie. Well, you know, there's a hockey team. They were originally called a minor league hockey team. They're originally called the Lake Erie Monsters. Now they're the Cleveland Monsters. And I think Great Lakes Brewing has a beer called the Lake Erie Monster.
Mm-hmm.
So we all remember how polluted the Cuyahoga River was.
Right.
And how it caught fire.
Right, right.
So, you know, these fishermen are out. You know, they're out on Lake Erie. And all of a sudden the water underneath the boat starts to heave and the boat starts to rock side to side, and they see this huge black shape larger than the boat gliding under the surface. First they think it's an alligator, but then it grips the hull of the boat and rocks it back and forth, and they call the Coast Guard, and they say, "We saw this thing, it looks like a really long alligator, like the creature from the Black Lagoon." And they say, "It sounds like you saw the Lake Erie Monster."
Mm.
So the Lake Erie Monster is a, I think it was a sturgeon. Started its life as a sturgeon.
Okay.
And then it started just inhaling toxic waste that was flowing out of the Cuyahoga River. Just became addicted to toxic waste. The more it ate, the larger and larger it got. And so turned into this grotesque creature and developed a hatred of humans, and it just started attacking boats. It started attacking or ships that came into Cleveland, and but once the city cleaned up the river, the monster had no food, and so it withered and returned to its original shape.
Wow! Now, who named it Bessie? Do we know?
It was named after the. It was named after a nuclear power plant.
Oh.
The best. A newspaper held a contest to name the monster, so they settled it on. They settled on South Bay Bessie after the Davis Bessie nuclear power plant, which is sort of another symbol of humanity's capacity to mutate nature.
Yeah,
and then there's a wax museum that has a portrait of the Great Lake Erie serpent.
Oh wow!
But that's another one. You know, with the beer and with the hockey team, that's kind of like the Hodag. That's another one where the legend has become part of the city's culture.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true. I think that's true of a lot of these folk tales. I mean, we're talking about, you know, we got a bar that's leaving a Bloody Mary on a bar on the bar for Resurrection Mary. We've, you know, the we talked about the, how that people are embracing the hodag and
In Pittsburgh, there's a statue of Joe Magarac. He was the man of steel. He was born in a he was born in an iron mine, and he could work 24 hours a day. He could lift more steel than anybody else.
Yeah,
and he finally ended up melting himself in a furnace to build the biggest steel mill in Pittsburgh.
And they got a statue up for him.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, listen, this book is great, man. And I give a shout out to your illustrator real quick before we let you go.
Oh yeah. David Wilson. He's a guy from Cleveland. He made it look beautiful.
He did.
He's got some fantastic stuff.
Yeah, the illustrations are great. The stories are fun and interesting and really cool. Ted, thanks a lot, man. It's a terrific book. People can get it now.
It's Bell Publishing. It's a Midwestern publisher out of Cleveland, so you can look for it on their website.
Okay. Folk Tales and Legends of the Middle West. Ted, thanks very much, man.
All right, thank you.
Happy Halloween.
You too.
All right, there you go. There's Ted, Ted McClelland, and it's called Folk Tales and Legends of the Middle West, and you can check out edwardmcclelland.com. That's his website for more information. A really terrific book, great, great fun stories and folk tales, and really fun illustrations as well. So there you go. Check out that book. It's really fun to tell these stories around this time of year as well. Okay, let's take a quick break. We got the news coming up next here on 720 WGN. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. It's Wild Card Wednesday, so it's any artist, any song, anything. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200. Who requested the Henry Mancini Experiment in Terror?
That's coming to us from Paul in Maryland.
Ah, all right. That is the theme, for those of you who don't know. That's the theme from Creature Features. It used to be on Channel 9. Back in the day, and everybody knows that's the theme from Creature Features. I used to watch it every weekend. It was the best. So there you go. It's appropriate because, you know, tomorrow's Halloween. Yeah, man. But the weather, though, seems like it's Christmas.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the kids when there's terrible weather. It's going to be snowing and sleeting and stuff tomorrow. Man.
Well, if they want to get that candy, they got to work hard for it.
Yeah. Well, I just feel bad for them. So, all right. Well, welcome back, everybody. We are here, and we're going to be talking about the War of the Worlds broadcast took place on this date in 1938. And so we'll talk about that and then other Halloween hoaxes and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Right before we got on the air, about 15 minutes before we got on the air at 1 o'clock, we found out that John Witherspoon passed away. John Witherspoon was an incredibly funny guy, and he was 77. John Witherspoon, an actor, comedian who for decades made audiences laugh in television shows and films, including the hit Friday franchise, died suddenly at his home. He was 77. It is with deepest sorrow that we confirm our beloved husband and father, John Witherspoon, one of the hardest working men in show business, died today at his home in Sherman Oaks at the age of 77. Where Witherspoon's family said in a statement to Deadline, he is survived by his wife Angela and sons J.D., Alexander, and a large family. We are all in shock. Please give us a minute for a moment in privacy, and we will celebrate his life and his work together. John used to say, I'm no big deal, but he was a huge deal to us. Comedy great Witherspoon was born in Detroit in 1942 as John Weatherspoon. He launched a stand-up comedy career and began acting in the late 70s with guest starring TV roles, making his feature debut in the 1980 Jazz... Wow, he's in The Jazz Singer with Neil Diamond? Wow. I didn't know that. Witherspoon appeared in numerous films, including Hollywood Shuffle, Boomerang, Vampire in Brooklyn, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, Bird, and The Meteor Man. Witherspoon was perhaps best known for his role as Ice Cube's grumpy dad in Friday. He also appeared in the sequels Next Friday and Friday After Next, and was expected to reprise his role in the long gestating final installment of the franchise titled Last Friday. Witherspoon also voiced Gramps on the cult animated series The Boondocks. He likely would have returned for the series' upcoming revival on HBO Max, also known for his role as Pops on The Wayans Brothers. Witherspoon did stints on such comedy series as The Tracy Morgan Show, The First Family, and Black Jesus. Even with his busy TV and film career, stand-up comedy remained an important part of Witherspoon's life, and at age 77, he continued to perform regularly and had several dates coming up at the time of his death. Sad, man.
Very sad. Very, very sad.
He's a funny guy. Do you remember the first time you saw him? Was it in Friday?
I think it honestly might have been in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka.
Yeah.
Because I managed to see that at a pretty young age. But I loved him in that. But his role as Ice Cube's dad in Friday is just so funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
I used to get quoted around the house, especially, you're going to need nobody go in the bathroom for 35, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Like my dad would come out and say that.
Yeah. No, those are funny movies, and he's fantastic in them. His stand-up was great. He was just a funny guy. You know, he was great on talk shows. And people are starting to, you know, to tweet about it. Like Ice Cube said that he's devastated and that the world is going to be less funny. And so many people, you know, who grew up watching this guy. I loved him in everything. I thought the guy was just fantastically funny. And again, he worked all the time, and he just done, Joe Rogan's podcast. I think it was like last week. And like I said, he was still scheduled for more comedy dates and things like that. If you guys want to jump in with a talk or a text here about John Witherspoon, what did you love him in, and how did he make you laugh? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So do we have a clip from Friday that we can play?
Yeah, this one's a little clip. It's a little bit more of a serious moment from Friday. It's a scene where he is talking to Ice Cube as Ice Cube is about to leave the house with a gun.
Mm.
I never would have moved in this neighborhood if we had known you need a gun to walk down the damn street.
You know how it is around here.
Oh, no, son. That's not the way it is. You kids today are nothing but punks. Sissified. So quick to pick up a gun. You're scared to take an ass whipping. This one makes you a man. When I was growing up, this was all the protection we needed. You win some, you lose some. But you live. You live to fight another day. Put the gun down. Come on, put up your dukes. Now you're a man.
There you go. Yeah, man. Yeah, he's great in those movies. One of my favorite performances of his, we mentioned, you know, some of the other stuff that he was in, like Meteor Man, which is a really underrated movie, Robert Townsend movie, really underrated, very, very funny movie, superhero movie. And we mentioned I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, and Hollywood Shuffle. But I love him in Boomerang. He's hilarious in Boomerang, and he plays David Alan Grier's father. And there's a scene where his parents, David Alan Grier's parents, are invited over to have dinner with Eddie Murphy and Halle Berry and Martin Lawrence, you know. And so he shows up with a fantastic outfit on. And so this is you got to coordinate. This is one of my favorite scenes in Boomerang. I just laugh out loud every time. So let's hear a little bit of this.
See, when you saw me, you saw the mushroom shirt.
Mushroom shirt.
Bang, mushroom shirt.
Mushroom shirt.
But see, you can't stop with the mushroom shirt. You now, gotta go on.
I had to stop that
no,
shirt.
No, you gotta keep going.
Okay.
Now let me show you something. Look at that.
Oh, you got on a mushroom belt. Gerard, did you know your pops had a mushroom belt on?
Yes.
But you don't stop there, see?
No,
you gotta keep going.
What you got, a mushroom ring?
Yes, good idea. Look what I got.
Doc! Gerard! Did you know on the inside was special mushrooms?
Yes!
And then he goes on to embarrass him even more at the dinner table, which we can't play. Those are some dialogue that we can't play. He was just a really funny guy, and his stand up is really good. A lot of it, unfortunately, we can't play on the air because he did work Blue. But yeah. So John Witherspoon passed away, and I would, you know, hope that people would watch maybe Boomerang or the Friday movies or something to remember him. Always memorable on the Wayans Brothers, and his voice work on the Boondocks was also great. So very funny guy, and we're all very sad that he passed away. And he passed away on he passed away suddenly too. Nobody, you know, it was not a long term illness or anything like that. Passed away. They didn't say how he died or what caused his death. But he was scheduled to do more stuff and make more appearances, and so it's a big loss in the world of comedy. John Witherspoon. Let's see. Here's Vin on WGN. Hi, Vin.
Hey, how's it going tonight for everybody?
All right.
Well, I'm really struck with this loss of another great guy. And, yeah. Wow. But, yeah, the first time I saw him was he played an undercover cop on Good Times when J.J. had gotten into illegal gambling.
Oh, right.
Yep. And also you can remember, too, that he played the DJ on What's Happening when Rerun had a dance contest against this guy that was supposed to be good at stepping, and think he called himself Danny Dynamo.
Yeah.
Or Domino, Danny Domino.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Witherspoon was the DJ.
But
it wasn't until I saw him in the first House Party that I realized that this guy had been around for a long time.
Yeah, House Party. Oh, he's hysterical in House Party. He's hysterical in that movie. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember he kept making comments about Public Enema. What's a Public Enema?
Public Enema, that's right. What's a Public Enema? That's great. Yeah, he was a funny, funny man, Vin. And
yes, he was.
Yeah, he left behind a lot of stuff that we can all watch and laugh at. You know what I mean?
Yes, indeed. Yes,
okay,
indeed.
Vin, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Love you guys.
Take care. House Party.
Public Enema.
He's hilarious in House Party. I don't know why they didn't include that in his obit.
He's just the kind of guy that had so many just parts. As you said, he was always working, and he always kind of was himself.
Yeah. But that persona was so funny.
Exactly.
And the way he delivered lines and stuff was always very unique. And yeah.
It's rare that you get a comedian like that who just has to be themselves. And always funny.
Yeah, God, House Party. How did I even forget that he was? God, he's so funny in House Party. He's hilarious in House Party. So anyway, so just, you know, John Witherspoon. Let's remember the guy. He's only 77 years old and worked all the way up until the day he passed away. So I just wanted to mention. I wanted to mention and pay a little respect to John Witherspoon this morning. So all right, why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the War of the Roses radio play. War of the Roses. Yeah, War of the Roses radio play. The War of the Worlds radio play was broadcast on this date in 1938, and it frightened a nation. And we'll talk about that, but then we're going to get into some other Halloween hoaxes as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk or text if you want to jump in at any time this morning on this Wednesday morning.
Was a one-eyed, one-horned, blind, purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, blind, purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, blind, purple people eater. Sure looks strange to me.
One-eyed.
Well, it came down to earth and it lit in a tree. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me. I heard him say...
All right, welcome back. Wild Card Wednesday, everybody. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. That's any artist, any song, anything. I see people are embracing the Halloween theme.
Oh, yeah.
For Wild Card Wednesday this morning, considering tomorrow is Halloween. Now, that wasn't the original artist. Who was that? Not.
That was a version by Jimmy Buffett.
That was Jimmy Buffett?
That was Mr. James Buffet.
Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Dino.
All right, Dino. Very cool. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk about some of the biggest Halloween hoaxes in history. Lots of Halloween stuff to talk about. But on this date, in 1938, October 30th, 1938, the War of the Worlds, Orson Welles' realistic radio dramatization of a Martian invasion of Earth was broadcast. on the radio. I'm trying to remember. I can't remember the name of the movie. Maybe somebody knows, but there was a TV movie in the 70s about this. It was an ABC movie of the week, and I can't remember what the title was. Like the night that America panicked, or
the night that panicked America.
Oh, the night. Oh, okay.
Yeah, 1975.
That was close enough. Who was in it? Let's see who was in that. Look up the credits on that one. I know it was a TV movie. It was on ABC. I watched it, and I remember the ratings were like really big, and everybody was talking about it. And but who was in it? Who played Orson Welles?
So let's see here. Orson Welles was played by Paul Shanar.
Okay.
Or however you say that. Vic Morrow was in it. Cliff DeYoung, Michael Constantine. Eileen Brennan, Meredith Baxter.
Meredith Baxter, because legally, Meredith Baxter had to be in every TV movie ever made. Between her, Linda Pearl, and Desi Arnaz Jr., they were in like tons of made-for-TV movies in the 70s.
John Ritter's in it.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember watching it and enjoying it. The story's crazy, though. I mean, it really is crazy. And, Orson Welles, by the way, was only 23 when he and his Mercury Theater Company decided to update H.G. Wells' 19th-century science fiction novel, The War of the Worlds, for national radio. 23 years old. And he was, when he made Citizen Kane, he was 26. 26 when he made Citizen Kane. Man. I don't know what I was doing when I was 26, but I certainly wasn't doing anything, you know, brilliant. I can tell you that much. So he's only 23 when the Mercury Theater Company decided that they were going to update H.G. Wells' science fiction novel, The War of the Worlds, for national radio. Despite his age, Wells had been in radio for years, most notably as the voice of the Shadow in the hit mystery program of the same name. War of the Worlds was not planned as a radio hoax, and Wells had little idea of the havoc that it would cause. I wonder if Carl and Lisa have ever played that. They must have, right? They must have played the War of the Worlds on broadcast on their show, Carl and Lisa. It's such a legendary show, and Orson Welles did a ton of radio. I mean, I'm sure Carl Amare, you know, who is, you know, a historian of that era and of obviously of radio dramas and radio shows, has talked in the past about just how much radio work Orson Welles did. Like on the same night, he would drive back and forth from different places and different studios to do more than two or three radio shows in one, you know, in one night. So he was big deal in the radio business. The show began on Sunday, October 30th at 8 p.m. A voice announced the Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliate stations present Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air in War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. Sunday evening in 1938 was prime time in the golden age of radio, and millions of Americans had their radios turned in. But in most cases, Americans were listening to ventriloquist Edgar Bergen and his dummy Charlie McCarthy on NBC, and only tuned to CBS at 8:12 p.m. after the comedy sketch ended and a little-known singer went on. By then, the story of the Martian invasion was well underway. Wells introduced his radio play with a spoken introduction, followed by an announcer reading a weather report. Then, seemingly abandoning the storyline, the announcer took listeners to the Meridian Room in the Hotel Park Plaza in downtown New York, where you will be entertained by the music of Ramon Raquello and his orchestra. Putrid dance music played for some time, and then the scare began. An announcer broke in to report that Professor Farrell of the Mount Jenning Observatory had detected explosions on the planet Mars. Then the dance music came back on, followed by another interruption in which listeners were informed that a large meteor had crashed into a farmer's field in Grover's Mills, New Jersey. Soon, an announcer was at the crash site describing a Martian emerging from a large metallic cylinder. Good heavens, he declared. Something's wriggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Now here's another one, and another one, and another one. They look like tentacles to me. I can see the thing's body now. It's large, large as a bear. It glistens like wet leather. But that face, it, ladies and gentlemen, it's indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. It's so awful. The eyes are black and gleam like a serpent. The mouth is kind of V-shaped with saliva dripping from its rimless lips that quiver and pulsate. You have some of this?
Oh, we now return you to Carl Phillips at Grover's Mill.
Ladies and gentlemen, my aunt. Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmer's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain's conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Ah, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute. Something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Ah! The whole field's caught up by the woods, the barns, the gas heading everywhere. It's coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission.
That's great, man.
That's terrifying.
That's great stuff.
You imagine tuning into that?
Yeah, that's great. That's really, really great stuff. Yeah, that's awesome.
I'd be packing up the kids. That's what people did, man.
That's what they did. They freaked out. People were freaking out. That's good stuff, though, obviously. You know, it's the Mercury Players, man, the Mercury Theater Players. The Martians mounted walking war machines and fired heat ray weapons at puny humans gathered around the crash site. They annihilated the force of 7,000 National Guardsmen. After being attacked by artillery and bombers, the Martians released a poisonous gas into the air. Soon, Martian cylinders landed in Chicago and St. Louis. The radio play was extremely realistic, with Wells employing sophisticated sound effects and his actors doing an excellent job portraying terrified announcers and other characters. An announcer reported that widespread panic had broke out in the vicinity of the landing sites, with thousands desperately trying to flee. The Federal Communications Commission investigated the unorthodox program but found no law was broken. Networks did agree to be more cautious in their programming in the future. Yeah. The broadcast helped Orson Welles land a contract with a Hollywood studio, and in 1941 he directed, wrote, produced, and starred in Citizen Kane, a movie that many have called the greatest American film ever made. But he freaked out the entire country that night. People freaked out. So, and does anybody remember the TV movie? So, he didn't mean it as a hoax. So, but we're going to talk about some Halloween hoaxes from history coming up. And if you want to jump in with anything about the conversation, it's 312-981-7200. We got the news coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's everybody doing this morning? It's wet out there. Be careful. All right. And we are here until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me, Wildcard Wednesday? That is any artist, any song, anything. Who requested that, and what was that?
So that is coming to us from Steve, and that is the theme to the television show Goosebumps.
Oh!
And when that used to come on, I would run away from my TV.
Is that right?
I was terrified of Goosebumps. Like the talking dummies and all the,
yeah,
all the weird stuff. I mean, it was almost like you in Dark Shadows.
Yeah,
I would
be like,
I'd kind of watch it. My mom would be like, well, do you want me to turn it on?
Exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened to me when I was a kid.
Those books used to scare me, too.
Ooh. I stood behind the couch and peeked out from behind the couch when Dark Shadows was on. And my mom would always be like, I can change the channel. I'd be like, no, keep it on. But I'd hide behind the couch and like peek out and watch it because it freaked me out when I was a kid. They made a second Goosebumps movie that...
yeah, like Halloween Unleashed or something.
I didn't see that one. I liked the first one. I thought the first movie was entertaining with Jack Black and... You said the talking.
Talking dummy. That was the one that always scared the hell out of me. I don't like dummies. I don't like ventriloquism. I don't like dolls.
Have you seen Magic?
With
Anthony Hopkins?
No.
Dude. Well,
if it's a talking dummy movie, I'm going to avoid it.
Oh, man.
Don't do this. Even Annabelle, which I don't even like those movies. It still freaks me out. I can't watch it.
Here's the thing. This Magic from 1978, it came out a week before Halloween, the movie Halloween, okay? 1978. And Anthony Hopkins plays a ventriloquist who goes nuts. And Margaret's in it. Ed Lauder's in it. Richard Attenborough directed it. And the dummy is named Fats. That's the dummy's name. And he's probably the most terrifying, looking ventriloquist dummy of all time. So if you freak out about ventriloquist dummies, you might not want to Google Magic Fats, you know, and Google image that.
Well, you know I'm going to do it now.
Well, take a look at it then. Jeez. Magic 1978 Fats. Just Google that image and you'll see him.
Oh, well, what the hell? Who designed this?
I don't know.
God. Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, Burgess Meredith is in it, too.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the last thing you want to see before you die.
Well, he gets beat with him. Anthony Hopkins beats him to death with Fats. And then after he beats him to death, like, Fats is covered in blood. So here's the thing. And so Anthony Hopkins did his own ventriloquism in the movie. So years later, that came out in 1978. Years later, he was in town for the Chicago Film Critics Awards when we used to do a ceremony and have the celebrities come in. It was 1992. So everybody but Jodie Foster showed up. Like everybody but Jodie Foster showed up from Silence of the Lambs, which, you know.
We know how you feel.
Yeah, I love Jodie Foster. I adore her. But Jonathan Demme came. I got to meet Jonathan Demme, despite the fact that that's my least favorite Jonathan Demme movie. And Edward Saxon, I got to meet those guys. And Anthony Hopkins was in town to pick up his award. He won for Best Actor. So we're at the cocktail reception after the awards, and I walk up to him, and I'm like, hi, you know, it's a pleasure to meet you. You know, obviously, I'm a huge fan. I said, hey, can you still do the voice of Fats? And he launched in, like that, and started doing dialogue for Magic without moving his lips and doing the voice of Fats. And I was like, okay, this is the coolest thing. This is the coolest thing ever.
A consummate professional.
You know? This movie came out in 1978. This is 1992. And in a split second, he launched right into ventriloquism doing a perfect Fats. So, all right. Let's see. Here's Rick on WGN. Hi, Rick.
Hi, fellas. How you doing tonight?
All right. What's up?
Well, listen, I listen to you guys as I get my work done over here in Honolulu. So it's about 9:35 or so the day before.
All right.
On Tuesday. But love the show. Do a little live. I do radio here in Honolulu. And the whole thing about War of the Worlds is something I relate to growing up in Valparaiso, Indiana, back in the day. And my auntie would have the double album of War of the Worlds on LP.
Oh, sure.
And I remember back in the day, and it had like the whole headline and newspaper and all of that kind of graphic on the album.
Yeah.
But I would just listen to that over and over and over again, got to the point of almost memorizing it. And I was no more than 10 years old.
Yeah. I remember that record. I absolutely remember that record. No question about it.
But. Yeah. Also, in our biz, it's purported. I can't guarantee, but the reason why we have the top of the hour through the FCC ID, a legal ID, was out of the public reaction and really the outrage that the public expressed about what the broadcast did, how they were able to present without breaking.
Oh,
without informing,
sure. Now that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's great stuff. All right, Rick, thanks for the call, sir.
Hey, appreciate it. Aloha, guys.
Take care, buddy. That guy's got some pipes.
Yeah, well, he's lucky he's in Honolulu right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never have to worry about a snow day in your life.
Nope. And it's going to snow on Halloween here in Chicago. We got a lot of texts here. 608 area code says, the War of the Worlds hit several times. There was a DJ that caused a minor panic in Buffalo with a version in the late 70s and a version in Latin America that actually ended up with fire that killed two people caused by a mob at a radio station. Good Lord. 301 area code says Orson Welles' film F for Fate contains a segment on the War of the Worlds broadcast. Yes, it does. 219 area code says, great book by A. Brad Schwartz. It covers every letter sent to the FCC and CBS as well as what was happening every moment of the play. It's called Broadcast Hysteria, Orson Welles and the War of the Worlds. It's highly recommended. All right. That's from Steve. Thank you, Steve.
I got to check that out. Yeah. The War of the Worlds broadcast is probably my favorite thing that's ever happened.
It's insane what happened that night, you know? 708 area code says, I don't think I can remember this as a Halloween hoax, but an urban legend. Do you remember the story in Chicago in the early 90s about a guy who dressed up as Homie the Clown who would either attack or kill people? Homie the Clown?
Homie don't play that?
We were talking about the guy who just dressed up like a clown and just would, with a balloon, and just would, like, stand under streetlights late at night and not bother any, not say anything to anybody, but just stand there. And it would unnerve people and scare the hell out of them. And I thought that story was hilarious. I think it was in, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was in Wisconsin? It was like this, it was the same clown, and he would just appear, you know, like either every other night or something like that. And he wouldn't bother anybody, he wouldn't attack anybody, he wouldn't chase anybody or do anything. He would just appear and just stand there with a balloon, like under a streetlight at, like, you know, 11 o'clock at night. And I can't remember, they had a name for the clown. He had a name, and this kind of hoax thing or creepy thing went on for a while. Like, he did it a bunch of times. He would show up and just stand there and just freak people out because people don't like clowns, or most people don't like clowns. But, yeah, I don't remember a guy dressed up like Homie the Clown attacking people. I don't remember that story at all. If that happened, I don't remember it. But I do remember the clown, the guy dressed as a clown, like I said, I think it might have been in Wisconsin, who would just show up and stand on the street and freak people out. I always thought it was hilarious. Like, every time, because it went on for a while. It was a thing, and it was on the internet, and they were posting pictures of this guy dressed as the clown, and it went on, I think for, you know, like a few months he was doing this, and then I guess it just stopped. But people were freaking out. It made a big deal, you know, they made a big deal out of it because it was freaking people out that there was just some guy dressed up like a clown standing on the street, not saying anything under a street lamp. So. Halloween hoaxes is what we're talking about. War of the Worlds did not turn out to be, it wasn't supposed to be a hoax. Obviously, it was just a radio play that was just really, really realistic and good and well done. It scared the hell out of the entire nation. So it wasn't really a hoax, technically, but we do have some big Halloween hoaxes in history. By way of introduction, before we break here, love it or hate it, Halloween is the time of year when everyone's just a little bit on edge. Creepy, scary Halloween hoaxes certainly don't help, as this is the time of year when some of us seem more willing to believe stories that prey on our biggest fears. We don't like the idea of some strange force out there that we can't control, and we definitely don't like the idea that our loved ones might be at risk. But basically, all of these Halloween hoaxes are pure hokum, such as the following, which we should, which hopefully will help you sleep a little bit better tonight. So these hoaxes, these aren't real, but people thought they were real. So there you go. Now, by the way, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back. We'll jump right into these famous hoaxes. If anybody remembers these things that people believed, but they're not real, especially around Halloween time, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also, if anybody remembers a little more details about that clown guy from a few years back, if you remember what his name was, like I said, I think it might have been in Wisconsin, but he would just stand under a streetlight with a balloon dressed as a clown, not say anything to anybody, not bother anybody, but it would just freak people out. So if you remember any more details of the name of the clown, and then we'll do other Halloween hoaxes as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Be a part of the show here, 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take a break and be back right after this.
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob.
Just so, it's so weird that that's the song that they play during the opening credits of The Blob. And it's truly the best part of the movie. Because that movie's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, you've got Steve McQueen, who's clearly, what, pushing 30?
Yeah.
Playing a 16-year-old?
Yeah. I watch it every time Sven shows it.
Oh, because it's the best.
Yeah. Actually, the remake is actually really good.
Yeah.
From 1988, Chuck Russell directed that. That was a really good movie. So, anyway, who requested the Blob?
So, the Blob is coming to us from the 773.
All right, 773 area code. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday! could be anything, but we're kind of got a theme going because, you know, it's the day before Halloween, so all the listeners who are making the wildcard requests, they're kind of embracing the time period here, Halloween. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. I was talking about this clown, a guy that would dress up like a clown, just stand under streetlights, not bother anybody. Someone says that it's Gags the Clown, 7738, says Gags the Clown in Green Bay.
Yeah, and he's been sending in photos of Gags the Clown, and I would ask that he kindly stop.
Is anybody sending you photos of Fats the Dummy from Magic?
Oh, God, not yet. But I would also ask those people to kindly not.
Uh-huh.
As my dad used to say, gonna no do that.
Uh-huh. 312 area code says, I wonder what it would take to pull off the H.G. Wells hoax today. I don't think we could.
Yeah, no way.
Wouldn't happen today. So, anyway. So people are sending you pictures of Gags.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
It's just a clown, man.
I know, but it's not a happy clown. I don't have a particular thing with clowns, but that's not a happy-looking clown.
No. He's Gags the Clown.
He's bald. Got the standing under street lamps in Green Bay.
Sure, that's cool.
It's terrifying. Green Bay's a scary enough place.
Yeah. Well, so Halloween hoaxes is what we were talking about. We were talking about folklore and legends and stuff a little bit earlier, and this all kind of ties in, especially at this time of year when you can tell these kind of stories and stuff like that. And if you guys want to jump in with your two cents on any of this stuff, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll read your text. We'll take your calls at 312-981-7200. All right, how about this Ghost Watch, one of the Halloween hoaxes? Ghost Watch was a pseudo-documentary about a supposedly haunted house aired by the BBC on Halloween night in 1992. The writers and actors behind the mockumentary did everything they could to make the piece seem like it was really absolutely happening, to the point of hiring well-known BBC personalities, including trusted journalist and presenter Michael Parkinson and Red Dwarf's Craig Charles, to give the show extra credibility. As the crew's investigation went on, the whole program got darker and darker. The viewers supposedly started to learn about the ghost, named Pipes by the local kids, supposedly haunting this terrifyingly normal London family. Eventually, the presenters realize he's channeling their energy through a sort of reverse seance, which causes the death of one person and the possession of another as Pipes steps into the real world. The entire thing was designed to look as real as possible, even though it had a cast list and writing credits. It was advertised as a drama, but the feel of it was absolutely unscripted. Actors were given bullet points to hit instead of hard scripts. They used shaky and amateur-looking footage. And the show even aired the number of a hotline manned by actors who were in on the joke and that distressed viewers could call. Ghostwatch was so widely believed, in fact, that real people died from it. In November of 1993, the British Medical Journal published case studies on two 10-year-old boys treated for post-traumatic stress in the wake of watching the film. Wow. I've never heard of this before. One boy reported that being subjected to relentless nightmares and flashbacks during the day, which escalated to the point where he refused to let his mother out of his sight, and he would bang his head against the wall until she returned. The other boy refused to sleep alone, so terrified that he made himself sick over the idea of spending a night by himself. This is unbelievable. According to the journal, both of these patients were successfully treated and eventually showed improvement, but others weren't so lucky. 5 days after the broadcast, Percy and April Denham found their son Martin hanging from a tree in a park near their Nottingham home. He had a note in his pocket that read, "Please don't worry. If there are ghosts, I will be a ghost, and I will always be with you as a ghost." My God. According to Percy, Martin had been extraordinarily terrified by the show, and he'd been convinced not only that it was real, but there were ghosts in his own home. Martin, who was 18 years old but reportedly had the mental abilities of a 13-year-old, had made countless comments about the show in the days leading up to his death, even though no lawsuits were ever filed. The Denhams told newspapers they couldn't afford to go to court. And they weren't alone. Hundreds of complaints were received, including one from a man who claimed his wife had gone into labor in the middle of the show. Man. Even though the show was never re-aired, it's gotten something of a cult following and was recently the subject of a real documentary. How do I not know about this?
Well, it was a BBC thing, and I guess just wound up localized.
Ghost Watch from 1992. Wow. Mm. There were certain elements that they were talking about. I mean, that's really crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Horrifying. But there were elements of what they were talking about as, you know, the broadcast itself that were totally what Blair Witch did.
Yeah. No, I mean...
There were people who thought Blair Witch was real.
Do you remember, I think it was Discovery, they went through this rash of doing pseudo-documentaries on, like, mermaids and stuff. It was maybe a few years ago.
I think it's funny you bring up mermaids after last weekend.
They're just like, oh, we're going to do a remake of The Little Mermaids. No, you don't. Don't do that now.
No, I'm talking about Lighthouse.
Exactly. I don't want to see another mermaid for the rest of my life.
Yeah. So anyway, so they were doing documentaries?
They did like a pseudo-documentary about how proof there was mermaids exist.
And on the BBC?
Not on the BBC. No. I want to say it was on Discovery or
Discovery.
Animal Planet, something in that kind of cable, you know, basic cable sort of deal. And I would come to school, and people were like, dude, they proved mermaids exist, man. I'm like, no, they didn't. Stop it. And they're like, yeah, they had on the Discovery Channel. I was like, people will believe anything.
Yeah.
They really will.
I mean, if it's done right, you know, if it's done really well, you know. I knew people who were convinced that the Blair Witch Project was real. They were convinced that was actual found footage and those three people were real people. I mean, they did a brilliant job. That was, you know, and I, you know, we've talked about this before. I am on the way positive side of Blair Witch Project.
Same.
I think it's a great movie. And I think it's really scary. I think it's a very scary movie. I know people who hate it. And there is kind of no in between. Either you love the Blair Witch Project or you hate it. I love everything about that movie, especially how it took advantage of the internet at such an early stage. And through that and how they advertised it and how they promoted it, that's why some people thought it was real. And, you know, just the way it was shot, the handheld, the shaky cam and all that stuff. There was a girl who was in the Factory Theater when we were doing a play. We were rehearsing a play when Blair Witch was released. And we had rehearsal one night, and she shows up like a ghost. She was like, she comes in, she was one of the cast members of the show. And she came into the theater, and she was ashen. And I was like, what's wrong with you? And she's like, I just saw the Blair Witch Project. And I'm like, oh, it's cool, right? Isn't that scary? And she's like, I can't believe that really happened to those people. I'm like, hold on. Hold on a second. It's not real. It's a work of fiction. Those three are actors. None of it was real. And she's like, what? Because she was absolutely convinced that it was like a real documentary and that those three people died or were killed by the Blair Witch.
Yeah. What got me out of it, because obviously I was quite young when that came out, and it was just the blitz of media. I was like, what is this movie?
Yeah.
What made me realize it was, I was really scared of it. I would see the commercials on TV, and then my mom said, like, okay, well, it can't be real because no one would ever put footage of people as they met their fates on TV. They would, or on in a movie. They would never broadcast that.
Yeah.
It's fake. And okay. I still didn't really believe her.
Yeah.
But
well, you know, and then you know, it was a no budget movie and it went on to make millions and it became, you know, massive. And then, you know, of course the backlash started. And then there was a horrible sequel.
Book of Shadows,
which was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And then the reboot that they did a couple of years ago.
Directed by Adam Wingard.
Absolutely horrible. And I love that guy. He's a great filmmaker. But it was so horrible. I mean, it was just terrible.
I appreciated that they tried to get back to what made the original so scary, but it was kind of a flash in the pan thing. You can't replicate that.
Oh, no, you can't.
You can't.
No. You can't. You can't. There's no way. It was the exact right time for that movie to come out. They handled it perfectly. You cannot capture lightning in a bottle like that again. But, of course, you know, the found footage thing continues today.
Yep. Waiting for someone to do it well again.
Yeah.
Waiting for it.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a break here for the news, and then we've got more Halloween hoaxes to talk about. And if you guys remember any of these or you want to comment on it, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. News is coming up. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. What was that? Who requested it?
So that's coming to us from Greg H., and that's At Midnight by Mighty Lemon Drops.
Oh, the Mighty Lemon Drops.
Yeah.
I haven't heard from them in a long time. Well, welcome back, everybody. We are here, and we're talking about Halloween hoaxes. If you want to jump in, if you remember any of them, 312-981-7200. Let's see. 815 says, where I grew up south of I-80, every year around Halloween, we heard about a cult. The cult would kidnap blonde virgins and never had any confirmed police reports. Yeah, I don't think that's real. 218 area code says, hey, Nick, I was wondering, have you or your crew ever seen a ghost or experienced anything creepy? You know, I worked at a bar called Simon's, and hung out at a bar called Simon's, which is still obviously a great place. It's in Andersonville, and it's supposed to be haunted. They've talked about that it's haunted. And I remember it was probably just all, you know, it was probably just, you know, because it was late at night and I was closing up the bar. And I went downstairs because the cooler was downstairs. It still is, I would imagine. And in order to, like, shut the cooler, if you needed to, like, shut the cooler down for some or whatever reason, you had to walk around the back of the cooler. And it was a very narrow, very dark hallway, and I went around the corner one night and I heard a sound, and I kind of turned and I thought I saw something, and I just went right upstairs. Like, I'm out of here. So, but I don't know, you ever, anything like that ever happened to you?
Yeah, the new 400 theater is super duper haunted.
Oh, it is
super duper haunted. Hopefully that doesn't scare anybody away, but there was an incident where we were opening up, and usually at about 2 o'clock, we would get our deliveries and things like that. You know, you get the extra popcorn, seed, soda, soda stuff, soda syrup. And Pepsi guy comes in, and there's my manager and assistant manager. And they're just like, hey, here's the receipt. You want me to just bring it back to the soda closet? I'm like, yeah, sure. So he takes the big dolly full of soda, and he goes back down the hallway, and the way it is that the 400, there's just one hallway going in and then a side hallway that takes you to two more theaters. So there's two theaters in one hallway, two more theaters down a side hallway. He goes and he unloads the soda stuff, and he comes back and he says, are you guys open right now? And manager's, no, we don't open for at least another hour.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, I think there's someone in the theater. And they're like, really? Did you see something? He's like, yeah, I saw a woman. She was wearing like kind of like a white dress or something like that. Kind of, I saw her go into theater number 4, which was down this hallway.
Yeah.
And to the right. So my manager and stuff, they go back there. They see nothing. I mean, all the lights are off. They haven't even turned on the projectors to warm them up yet.
Yeah.
And they go back to the Pepsi guy, and they're just like, yeah, there's nobody here. It's literally just us. We're the first people here. We walked in maybe 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And they said that the Pepsi guy had the whitest face. He just all of a sudden, all the blood left his face. He's like, no, I saw it. I saw this woman in white. And they're like, no, she's not here. And when I worked there, you know, sometimes you have late nights cleaning up the last shows. You can definitely feel something.
Yeah.
Everybody cleaned those theaters real quick.
Yeah.
And if you stayed too, we used to say that if you stay, you have to be quick cleaning, because if you stay too long, the ghosts get upset. They want you to leave.
Yeah.
They want you to go home because this is where they live.
Wow.
So we've had customers say something like, hey, you know, chilly spots all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And things like that. I mean, it's the theater itself is over 100 years old.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of history there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think a lot of old theaters are probably have some sort of feel like that to them.
Yeah. I bet the Music Box probably has a few hauntings or something like that.
So, I mean, yeah, that's interesting. Wow. Freaking out the Pepsi guy. Good thing it wasn't the Coke guy.
No. Well, funny enough, that Pepsi guy never came back. it was a different Pepsi guy from then on.
There you go. All right, we got some Halloween hoaxes that we're talking about here. We were just talking about this terrifying story about this pseudo-documentary that aired on the BBC one night in 1992 on Halloween night, and it was called Ghost Watch, and it was so realistically shown that people actually believed it, and it caused death and illness and all kinds of weird stuff. But how about this? Strangers tampering with candy. Every kid knows the routine. Once you get home, you'll surrender your loot to the nearest adult, who will scour the bag for needles or drugs and probably their favorite candy. It's annoying but necessary, right? It sure beats swallowing a needle, except here's the thing. The whole tainted Halloween candy thing is nothing but false fear-mongering. It basically never happened, as proven in 1985 when a sociologist from the University of Delaware named Joel Best decided to study the issue. After studying everything from news stories to police reports, he found that there were nearly no stories of candy actually being tampered with. Of the 80-plus stories he investigated about needles or razor blades inserted into candy, virtually all of them wound up being hoaxes. Objects put there by the kids themselves for attention. It wasn't evil strangers or neighbors wanting to hurt anyone. In the few cases where somebody did tamper with candy, it was almost always somebody the kids knew. In 1970, a 5-year-old boy in Michigan died with an obscenely large amount of heroin in his system. Heroin was found on his candy, but police later found out that the drugs had belonged to his uncle, who had laced the boy's candy after the fact to try and throw authorities off of his scent. My God. 4 years later, Ronald O'Brien and his neighbor took their kids trick-or-treating, and at one house, O'Brien gave the kids a giant pixie stick that he said someone at the door had handed him. Later, his 8-year-old son died from ingesting the poisoned candy. It wasn't a stranger that deliberately laced the candy, though. It was his own father. O'Brien wanted to cash on his son's life insurance policy, so he did the deed and got him executed in 1984. This is horrifying stuff. The fear of what's in our trick-or-treat bags peaked in 2000, with the only confirmed case of strangers tampering with Halloween candy before handing it out. James Joseph Smith stuck needles into Snickers bars and was arrested, but his tampering caused only one minor injury and no deaths. Wow. That's terrifying.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, it's extremely isolated.
Yeah.
And my mom used to make me fork over the candy. She would check it. Maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I don't remember my parents checking the candy.
Well, you got away with everything.
I mean, listen,
you guys were playing with gunpowder.
We were running around outside. We would trick-or-treat till like 10 at night, you know? And it wasn't just, you know, because now, you know, when kids go trick-or-treating, they go to houses that they know or if it's a suburb, it's just the one cul-de-sac. We would go to houses. We would go everywhere. If it was dark, there was no lights on in the house, we'd still go and ring the bell. In the 70s, man, you know. I know some people don't like it, but do you think it's funny? Because Jimmy Kimmel's going to do it again this year. Do you think the videos of parents telling their kids that they ate their candy and then the kids reacting to it, do you think that's funny? Because I do.
I'm so on the fence about it because I think it's a little bit funny. Like, I definitely, some of them, I get a chuckle. And I always get, like, a little bit of a heartwarming feeling when you have some of the kids that are like, that's okay.
Yeah.
You must have been hungry. Like, they're so sweet about it.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of a mean thing
to do. Oh, it is.
Do.
It's totally mean.
I think it's super cruel.
Oh, it is. And I would, There's no question about it. And I totally understand why people object to it. And, you know, like, it's videos about making kids cry.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to do that. You don't want your kid to cry. You don't want to make your kid cry. But I don't. I laugh my ass off every year at those videos. He's doing it again this year. He talked about it last night, and they're going to air it at the beginning of next week. But I always think it's funny. I know. I don't care. And I know. And deep down, I know it's cruel. And, if I had a kid, I wouldn't want to make the kid cry. But for some reason, it just cracks me up. And like you said, the varying reactions that these kids have. My favorites are the ones when they go, no, you didn't. Jimmy Kimmel told you to say that.
Yeah,
those are my favorite. When the kids know it's the Jimmy Kimmel bit, they're like, I ate all your candy. No, you didn't. Yeah, you're doing this for Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah,
it's like a 6 year old kid.
Probably shouldn't even know who Jimmy Kimmel is.
Yeah,
but
it's on way past his bedtime. Doesn't come out until 10:30 at night, you know. Because he talked about it last night, because I got to see a little bit of his monologue before I came to work.
Yeah.
And
I'm absolutely gonna watch it
because at the beginning of the show he was like, people ask me this year if we're gonna still do the videos of parents telling their kids that they ate their candy, and he's like, we are absolutely going to do it again this year.
It's like the same thing with the mean tweets. It's still funny when they do it. It's just a recurring
thing. I think mean tweets is funny, too.
Mean tweets is funny. I will say, one of the funniest instances of something like that, someone lying to someone and just, like, totally putting them through the ringer, was when Dean pretended to be Billy Joel.
Oh, man, yeah. I saw that footage.
And I was like, oh, this is horrible.
Yeah.
But it's so funny.
Yeah, yeah.
At least those people are grown adults.
That's hilarious. I saw that on, you know, Channel 9. I saw the whole thing, and it's very funny. But yeah, I mean, you know, like, I'm not a practical joke guy. I don't like practical jokes. I think they're, you know,
yeah,
most
you
of them
hate
are
April Fools.
I can't stand April Fool's Day, and you know, I mean, it's just, you know, most of them are, you know, like, practical jokes are made to look somebody made to make somebody look stupid. You know, and aren't you a moron for falling for it? That kind of stuff. But for some reason the Halloween candy thing cracks me up, and I think it's mostly because of the kids, how the kids react to it. It's just really funny. And then eventually, you know, like, they do say, okay, here's the candy. You know, they eventually, you know, let him in on the gag and go, you know, here's your candy.
I would never trust my parents again.
Well, that's another angle to look at it. It's like, how are your kids going to feel about you when you do that to them? You know what I mean? But some people hate it, and I totally understand why people hate it. And some people think it's cruel, and, you know, it's. And I totally understand that. But I can't lie; I laugh. Those videos—they make me laugh. They showed a few of them as an example last night, because, you know, he plugged it. He's like, "Get your cameras ready. Get everything. You know, post it to YouTube." He told everybody how they can be a part of it, and they'll play back the best of them. They get, like, thousands of entries, so they played a couple of the videos last night. And they're very funny. So anyway, all right. Halloween hoaxes. We're going to talk about more of these. These are terrifying. The results of these hoaxes are absolutely horrifying. So if you want to jump in with any of the Halloween hoaxes stuff, 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, we are going to talk about, movie scenes from your childhood that scarred you for life. don't necessarily have to be in a horror movie. They could just be scenes that freaked you out that you will never forget, that just scarred you for life. We'll get into that coming up here on 720 WGN. Oh, yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Wild Card Wednesday. You mean Wild Card Wednesday? Get your request in now, 312-981-7200. Who requested Frankenstein?
It's coming to us from our pal Jay. Thanks, right. Jay.
Thank you, Jay. Welcome back. We're talking about Halloween and Halloween hoaxes and stuff like that. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So we've got some of these other Halloween hoaxes that we're going to get to. And so we were just talking about tainted candy, Halloween candy, and how that some of that is not real, but when in if there are cases of it, they turn out pretty terrible. So those were kind of horrifying. We got some texts that were just in here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 815 area code says, I was completely unable to convince my three preteens that Blair Witch wasn't real. All right. 815 area code says, out here in Woodstock, there is a house that has no corners. It's said that the wife killed herself in a corner in the house, and her husband saw her ghost, so he made the house to have no corners. Now it's the Bull Valley Police Station. Really? 708 area code says, my neighbor used to dress like a bum and walk around the neighborhood during Halloween night, just like the clown in Plainfield. He would pop out of cornfields.
This is mean, man.
Yeah. All right. How about this? Razor blades and apples. This has been a this is a legendary Halloween story. You've seen Halloween 2, right?
Yeah.
There's a scene in Halloween 2 because most of it takes place in a hospital. There's a scene in Halloween 2 in the emergency room where they bring a kid in and he's got a razor blade stuck in his mouth. It's a good effect. I'll say that.
But it's total nonsense.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
This Halloween hoax goes hand in hand with the idea of candy that's been tampered with, but it's so oddly specific. There were always at least a few apples in every loot bag after a night of trick-or-treating, and there was never a fear that they would be wormy or drugged or stuck with thumbtacks. No, it was always razor blades. The idea of Halloween apples being filled with razors seems to show up in 1967 when the rumors and the fear hit, and they hit hard. The earliest instances seem to be in New Jersey. And by 1968, the state was enacting legislation that called for prison time for anyone caught putting razor blades in apples. Later investigations found the kids who had found razor blades in their apples had done it themselves, as with the tampered with candy. But because fear is more powerful than facts, the legend took hold. Yeah. I would you know, when I would go trick-or-treating, I'd be disappointed I got an apple.
I was, and I love apples.
I wanted candy, man. I can get an apple for free, you know, any day. I wanted candy. And then I'd be mad about some of the candy that I would get.
Yeah.
Because the people would just... And how about the people that would give you, like, pennies?
Yeah, that was always a bummer.
How about this? Toothpaste and a toothbrush they would give you. Why do I want that? I'm a kid. I want candy.
I did get that from my dentist's house because my dentist lived in the neighborhood. Well,
if you trick or treat to it, you know, if you trick or treat to your dentist's or go to the dentist's office, that's what you're going to get. You're not a dentist is not going to give you candy.
No, but come on, you can lighten up for one night a year.
Yeah, but so yeah, razor blades in apples. That's been a thing for as far back as I can remember.
But like, why razor blades?
I don't know.
And implying that you wouldn't notice that.
Yeah.
Like, how do you hide razor blades in an apple?
Yeah, I mean, but it became like a huge thing. I mean, I as a kid, I totally remember that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got an apple, you would look around to see if there was a slice in it or a little cut in it to see, you know. How about the popcorn balls? Do you remember the popcorn balls that people would give you?
Yeah.
They were always hard as a rock.
Never fun.
No. Pennies, popcorn balls, apples, toothpaste. Those were all things that nobody wanted.
Generic hard candy.
Oh, please.
Not even a Werther's. If I got a Werther's, I'd be all right.
How about the candies that are wrapped in the sort of waxy black and orange wrappers?
No one's quite sure where they come from.
They've been around, like, they always come out at Halloween. Nobody knows where they come from. Don't even know what kind of candy it is.
As far as I'm concerned, they grow in the wild. And people don't collect them.
I have no idea. I don't understand it. I don't get it. But some people like now, all right, okay, here you go. Where do you stand on candy corn?
That's a big no.
I love candy corn. I love candy corn. I love it.
That is a crime.
I love candy corn.
Can you elaborate?
I like the way it tastes. I like the way it looks.
I don't even know what it tastes like. It just kind of tastes.
How many people out there like candy corn? I know. I mean, I know I'm probably in the minority because most people can't stand it. But I happen to really like candy corn. Even as a kid, you know, I liked it. People would complain about it, and I'd be like, what are you complaining about? I'll eat your candy corn. You don't want your candy corn? I'll eat it.
My girlfriend really likes it. She's got a bag of it in the house, and she's like, hey, by the way, just stay away from my candy corn. I was like, trust me.
Yeah.
No problem.
You don't have to worry about me. Well, that's the one thing about candy corn, though, is like if you go trick-or-treating, most kids are going to go, ugh, and I'll just give it to me. You give me all the candy corn, I'll take it. But I know most people can't stand it, and it's a very unpopular. I think it's a very unpopular thing. Like when people get candy corn, they don't like it. I don't understand why it gets such a bad rap. I don't understand why it has such a bad rap. All right, more hoaxes we're going to talk about here. And if you want to jump in on any of this, 312-981-7200. And if you want to text in your support for candy corn or how much you hate it, do that too. 312-981-7200. Okay, the news is coming up. What is that?
This is the theme to Steptoe and Son.
Oh, the British show that Sanford and Son was based on.
Yep, yep, yep.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew that it was based on Steptoe and Son. Mm-hmm. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Glenn.
All right, Glenn. Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me? 312-981-7200. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking about Halloween hoaxes, and then we are going to talk about scenes in movies that traumatized you at childhood. Maybe like a movie scene that really just like traumatized you. And we'll do that a little bit later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We have a Blackhawks Express to play from what was easily probably the worst game they've played all season. And that'll be coming up later. But right now, we have Know Your Onion coming up too at 4:30. So make sure we get that in there too. So we'll get We'll get two contestants in to do a Know Your Onion, and that's when Tom is your host. He will read news headlines, and you have to guess whether those news headlines are real or whether they're from the satirical fake news newspaper, The Very Funny Onion. So your answer is real or onion. So that's coming up, Know Your Onion. We were just talking about candy corn, and Tom hates it, and I happen to really like it. 317 area code says, yay, Nick, I love candy corn, and I'm 61. I've been eating it for the past 3 weeks.
That's hardcore. Shout out.
Wow. Luke says, I love candy corn and the pumpkins. I'm going to watch the Halloween movie, Halloween 3, and make chili and then eat pumpkins. Okay. CJ says, candy corn, hate. I'd rather eat those black and orange peanut butter kisses or circus peanuts. Now, see, circus peanuts I have an issue with. Circus peanuts, I'm not crazy about. Stupid idea. How about giving out a coconut or a stinky durian fruit? Personally, my cavities like candy corn. We've got Trucker Rich here. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
My wife loves candy corn. I'm not a fan of it, but if you mix it with peanuts,
like dry roasted and some salted.
Yeah.
It's almost like a payday candy bar.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can see that. Yeah.
You know, I'll eat it that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then there's that, what, chocolate candy corn? You know, or
yeah.
not the traditional orange and yellow and white.
Right.
But it's like chocolate. That's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. The only thing that I can understand people is that it does have candy corn does have sort of a waxy consistency, so
yeah.
I can understand people objecting to that, but I think it tastes fine.
Yeah, I was teasing my wife that you know if you're eating candy corn, you might as well eat a candle and some crayons.
Yeah, well there you go. I think Tom agrees with you on that. All right, Rich, thanks, man.
Yeah. All right, yep. Have a good one.
Yep. All right, we're back to some of these Halloween hoaxes. What about this one, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre hoax? Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of those staple horror flicks that's a must-see if you're the least bit interested in the genre. Given how the movie's imprinted on everyone's psyche, it's not hard to see how people believed that seven people actually were killed by a marauding nut job armed with a chainsaw in a Los Angeles haunted house in 2014. According to the viral story, a 26-year-old man named Luis Ortega was caught on camera going on a rampage through a haunted house, as if we didn't need another reason not to visit one. The story was a hoax, even though there was a disclaimer stating that it was fake, it still went viral. The man behind the story was just as weird. The accompanying video showed a man with a chainsaw attacking apparently innocent bystanders. Here's the thing, they were innocent bystanders, and the footage was real. The man wasn't Luis Ortega. Though, but 24-year-old Dean Denon, circa 2012. He had been kicked out of an English pub for smoking and decided the best way to make his point was to leave, get a chainsaw, and come back and start swinging. Because no good pub goer tolerates that sort of thing, customers ultimately restrained him until he was arrested by police. No one was killed, but there were injuries. So, not quite the massacre the video promises. They had to make up a guy to make it more interesting. But it was certainly scary for the pub patrons. That's also terrifying. Jeez. All right. Blue Star Tattoos. Warnings about the so-called Blue Star Tattoos usually surface around Halloween and during the first few weeks of a new school year. Parents are warned that unscrupulous drug dealers are handing out temporary tattoos, usually in the shape of cartoon characters or kid-friendly images that are laced with LSD, and warning letters are handed out to schools and posted online. Not only are most of those letters signed by a fictional person working in a fictional place, Jay O'Donnell of the Danbury Hospital's Outpatient Chemical Dependency Treatment Service, they're also usually at the heart of a neighborhood panic, and they're complete hoaxes. Don't feel bad if you've fallen for this one. People have been falling for it for all over the world for almost a century and a half. According to folklorists, Iona and Peter Opie, similar rules were circulating in England in 1840, a time when people were a bit suspicious of just what it was that they were licking on their lick-and-stick postage stamps. Rumors spread that the glue was poisonous and that licking it would cause cholera. Modern-day scare likely came out of a misunderstanding of warnings about LSD, but it just goes to show that legends can easily be adjusted and updated by a new time and place. Even as decades go by, after all, human nature remains pretty much the same. I don't know that one.
That was something that was kind of circulated again when I was in high school.
Yeah.
There were rumors. But it just doesn't make... It's the same thing where people this year are afraid that folks are going to be giving out like edible marijuana candies to kids.
Oh, right.
I don't know anybody that would willingly just throw away money like that.
Yeah.
Because clearly they've either made them themselves or purchased them, and they either plan to do it themselves or sell it to their friends.
Yeah.
They're not going to give it away for free to kids.
All right, how about the black cat sacrifice? The warnings pop up every single Halloween when cat owners, especially those who have black cats, are urged to keep their pets inside for their own safety. Halloween is the time for satanic sacrifice, it said, and all across the country, cult members are getting ready to conduct their dark masses. It's not just pet owners who are on board with this one. A lot of animal shelters are, too. Stopping the adoptions of black cats around Halloween to stop them from falling in the hands of people who will abuse or sacrifice them. According to Yana Lalich, a cult expert from the California State University, this one is a hoax with a heartbreaking backstory. She says that while there is the occasional instance of a sacrificed cat on Halloween, it's not the work of cults or satanic rituals. It's usually the work of incredibly disturbed individuals looking to capitalize on the mythos of the holiday. Black cats aren't in any more danger on Halloween than they are any other day of the year. And while that's a good thing, it's also incredibly sad that they shouldn't be in danger at all. Some shelters happily are starting to reject the hoax, turning away from the idea that it's only bad people who are looking for black cats to adopt during the Halloween season. Instead, they're using Halloween to promote the idea that black cats actually aren't unlucky and that they're definitely not evil. The so-called black cat syndrome means that these friendly felines are often overlooked at shelters, and stopping their adoption at Halloween might not be necessary after all. My parents have two black cats. I grew up with a black cat. I've had several black cats over the years.
I love them.
I do, too.
I think they're beautiful creatures.
I do, too. I mean, I love cats in general.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have an affinity for the, for black cats. So do my folks. Yeah. They've got two black cats right now, and they're awesome. They're completely different personality-wise, though. You know, like one is like kind of a jerk and runs around a lot, and the other one is just like real quiet and don't bother me. They eat completely differently. It's very funny to see like the personalities of these cats. Max and Boo are their names.
Boo.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up watching the Melissa Joan Hart Sabrina. So
well,
I
was, so there you go.
Salem was the best.
I had a cat growing up that lived, he lived 23 years.
What?
He lived 23 years.
That's an old cat.
Yeah. He lived 23 years. It was weird because he died like right after I moved out. So, you know, out of my folks' house.
Yeah.
So.
23.
Yeah, he's 23. I had him my entire childhood. I mean, my, like.
Yeah.
I picked him out of a box after Little League when I was like five. After Little League. Or four. I was like four or something like that. And there was somebody outside the 7-Eleven with a box full of kittens.
Wow.
His name was Velvet.
23. That's a good life for a cat.
He was an Angora, so he had the long hair, black cat.
That's wild.
Beautiful cat. And then finally, the last Halloween hoax is the Cannibal's Haunted House. Every year, Halloween decorations get more realistic and terrifying. That's not necessarily a good thing. Just ask your dog or the dead woman who was left hanging on a chain link fence because everyone who walked past her just thought it was a Halloween decoration. That's not a hoax, unfortunately, but the cannibal-infested haunted house is. The story went viral in 2015, and it's a pretty ingenious one that preys on our biggest fears. Supposedly, a group of friends went into a haunted house in Austin, Texas, when they came across what looked like a terribly gruesome display of a man gnawing on someone in a bathtub. The screams turned out to be real, and it was a real cannibal chowing down. The story later became pro-gun narrative. The cannibal was killed by the gun-toting owner of a haunted house, only in Texas, but it wasn't true. The story ran for a Now 8 News site, and apparently the name of the website wasn't enough to tip people off. It went viral as people panicked, and millions later cited the story as that would never, ever go to a haunted house again. But check Snopes, because it's not real. So there you go. So these hoaxes continue every year. And, you know, they're all going to be around. We're never going to get away from these things. Some of them are really terrible, but it just every time around this time of year, that's when these things surface. So, okay, we're going to break here. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We are going to talk about movie scenes from your childhood that actually scarred you for life, like moments in movies or maybe even TV shows that like completely freaked you out that you'll never forget that scarred you for life. And we want to hear from your thoughts on that. 312-981-7200. After the 4:30 news, another round of Know Your Onion, where Tom will feed you a news headline, and you got to figure out whether it's real or from The Onion. And we got a Blackhawks Express that we'll play later in the show from easily the worst game they've played all season. But right now, we're going to break here for some weather. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
So that one, I didn't get a name for it, but that's The Married Life from Up.
Yeah, that's from Up. So just hearing that makes me want to cry. So there's your there's another request that's coming in, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and the news is next here from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. All right, Tom, do you have any movie scenes from your childhood that that completely traumatized you?
Oh, jeez. I mean, there's so many. I think the first time I saw it, or at least later times when I saw it, from The Lion King when Mufasa dies, it kind of... It grew to traumatize me.
Yeah.
It grew to traumatize me. But I'd also throw out from the third Lord of the Rings movie when they fight the giant spider, Shelob.
Oh, sure.
That really, and he gets pierced through his stomach with the stinger. That really got to me.
Yeah.
It really made me uncomfortable.
For me, it was... I've talked about this before. It was from The House of Dark Shadows, which was the movie, one of the two, because they had two movies. It's the movie, the first, I think it was the first film that came out based on the TV show Dark Shadows. It was called House of Dark Shadows. There's a scene in it where Barnabas Collins turns incredibly old. Like, he becomes, like, really, really old. And that scene traumatized me, and I had to leave the theater. My dad had to take me out to the lobby because it freaked me out so much. I'll never forget it. It freaked me out, and so I had to go out to the lobby. So my dad took me out to the lobby, and then I went back in and we watched the rest of the movie. But that scene, wow, man! I remember it just completely freaking me out. Like I couldn't take it. It traumatized me. And then, as I've said before, because I've told that story before on the air, and as I've said before, then some years later, as an adult, I watched that movie, and it was ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's a terrible movie, and that scene is ridiculous, where he turns into an old man. The makeup is terrible. It's not scary at all. But, you know, I was like 6 or something when I saw it the first time, and it just, you know, on the big screen, I was at the Chicago Theater on the big screen, freaked me out. So that's the first one. I've got a few. I got to think about it, though. The Exorcist did a pretty good number on me.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple scenes in The Exorcist, because I saw it at I was 8. I was like, my dad takes me to see The Exorcist when I'm 8. And so that did a pretty good job on me, too. But I'm sure that there are certain scenes. Oh, I got one. I don't like the movie. I've never really liked the movie, but the damn flying monkeys in Wizard of Oz. When I was a little kid and I first saw those flying monkeys in the Wizard of Oz, it scared me to death. I totally forgot about that. I was traumatized by those damn flying monkeys. Traumatized. Freaked me out. So those are a couple. We want to hear from you guys. Do you guys have any certain scenes that freaked you out? I have some example here. These are critics who write for editorial staff of Rotten Tomatoes who picked out their scenes from movies that completely freaked them out. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
Good.
Yeah, there were a lot of stuff that creeped me out when I was a kid, but this is the one I think really takes a cake. I'm actually watching the movie right now, and it's the scene, the segment in Creepshow about the crate monster.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that monster, I remember the way it looked at TV, it was like a horror movie version of Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah, it's big fangs, and you get in inside there and everything. Yeah, and I can see that. As a kid, I can see that freaking you out, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right, Ike, thanks.
No problem.
Here's Donald on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hi, there's this terrible movie, The Spider. That's one of the titles, but I think it's been called other things.
Okay.
But it's basically one of those tarantulas that are climbing on a cardboard set kind of, you know, thing.
Yeah.
But when I'm like, you know, 7 years old, it's like an amazingly horrible thing,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially when there's spiders in your backyard, you know, that are pretty awful looking, and some of the webs and that.
Yeah.
And then there's a scene where it's going through town, devastating, and you see from the spider's point of view. And there's a, you know, a pretty girl is screaming, and she gets her dress caught in the car.
Yeah.
And it comes right up on her, you know, and there you know that it's coming right in her face and she can't get out.
Yeah.
That freaked me out.
Yeah.
And then later on, they send a deputy out there to, like, find out what's going on, and they bring him back, and he's slung over the shoulder of one of the other cops, and they plop him on the table, and there he is all sucked out,
yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
Just covered, and wow, what a 1-2 punch that is.
Yeah, yeah, that's I remember that. It has several different names. I think I remember seeing it as Tarantula when I saw it. Donald, thanks for the call, Donald. I appreciate it. We got some texts coming in. Apparently people have been traumatized by movies and movie scenes. It's not an uncommon thing at all. Let's see. 815 area code. In the late 70s, a trilogy movie where the third scene has a small demon attacking a woman. She threw it in the oven and gave strength to it. What movie is that? It's Trilogy of Terror. Every year when we talk about horror movies on Halloween, Trilogy of Terror comes up.
I've already had 4 people text me in Trilogy of Terror, specifically that.
Yeah. The little doll,
yeah.
The little voodoo doll goes it's nuts terrifying. And starts chasing Karen Black around. I loved that movie when I was a kid. It didn't scare me. I just thought it was cool. And by the way, the other two stories suck in Trilogy of Terror. Oddly enough, Dan Curtis, the guy who's responsible for Dark Shadows, is responsible for Trilogy of Terror.
Sounds about right.
He's freaking people out all over the place. Man, I'm trying to remember some of the other ones that freaked me out. There has to be more. So, The Mummy, the original Mummy, where the mummy moves and the guy in the room who sees it goes nuts and just starts laughing. That freaked me out. It still freaks me out when I see it. The dude goes nuts and just starts laughing maniacally after the mummy moves. Oh, man. So scary. 708 area code scared me, and I will never forget it. Mr. Sardonicus. I'm 75 years old, and I will never forget that face. It's an old movie where he digs up the grave to get a lottery ticket. Yikes. Yeah, Mr. Sardonicus, classic William Castle, where his face is frozen into this, like, weird smile. 301 area code says, Attack of the Mushroom People is a terrible movie, but when I was a kid, the ending freaked me out. One of the characters turns and faces the camera to reveal that he is infected with the fungus. Oh my God, I'm wearing the t-shirt of a movie that traumatized me. How did I not? The first 10 minutes of Suspiria, I don't even know what to say about that. And the ending, I just remember being freaked out by Helena Marcos, her when she finally appears at the end. Death is behind that door. And then the girl comes out, and she's got the needles in her eyes, and she's bleeding. She's got the knife. That movie, I love Suspiria. It's the scariest movie I've ever seen, and that is a movie that really stayed with me. Still stays with me. And I own 4 t-shirts of Suspiria. So, 815 area code says, I was always uneasy about alien abduction scene in the 1993 movie Fire in the Sky. The aliens looked weird, anorexic old men in rubber suits, but they're very disturbing to this day. It's weird what gets you, you know, when you see a horror movie. It's weird. All right, let's break for the news, and we'll come back. We'll jump right back into this. Movie scenes that traumatized you as a kid. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are here till 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. Who requested Dean Richards?
That's Jermaine.
Okay. There you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Lines are pretty full right now because we're talking about a topic that I think everybody has at least one movie or one movie scene that completely traumatized them when they were a kid. The editorial staff at Rotten Tomatoes put together their their thoughts on this. And they choose the movie scenes from childhood that scarred them for life. That's what we're talking about here. 312-981-7200. We got a ton of texts coming in and a lot of phone calls here to get to. And I think everybody has this in common. Gary sends in a text that said the Tingler freaked him out. 630 area code says, the first scene in Jaws, I was 7 when it came out. I was in my 30s before I could watch that scene. I could watch the movie when I got older, but not that scene. I'd close my eyes and plug my ears.
Wow.
I was 10 when Jaws came out. That opening scene freaked me out, too. 224 area code says, hey, Nick, my parents rented Terms of Endearment when I was 9. They had no idea what it was about. Needless to say, the scene where Deborah Winger has to say goodbye to her kids has scarred me for life. I was so terrified that something was going to happen to my parents. That scene destroys me. 219 area code says, freaks me out in the movie Poltergeist when the man in the bathroom at the mirror ripping his face off. That's my only, the only part of the movie I like is that scene. 708 area code, Communion. Christopher Walken was scary as the, it was as scary as the aliens. Um, 847 area code says, the monkeys on with the roller skates for hands in Return to Oz freaked me out. A lot of Return to Oz, I would imagine, freaks people out. See, now, I love that movie. I don't like The Wizard of Oz, but I love Return to Oz, and I liked Oz Great and Powerful, the Sam Raimi movie. They include Return to Oz in this article. One of the writers says, it's the hallway of heads. The unofficial sequel to MGM's Wizard of Oz, Walter Murch's Return, is a far cry from the brightly colored 1939 musical. Not only does it have a much darker and fantastical narrative, this scene perfectly encapsulates why the film is the stuff of nightmares. In a bid to avoid being decapitated, Dorothy, played by Firouza Balk, has to steal the powder of life from Princess Mombe, played by Jean Marsh, to escape. Unfortunately, she has to walk almost silently through a hallway of sleeping heads and in full view of them to get the powder. For extra pressure, it's placed inconveniently next to Mombi's real head. Combined with David Shire's powerful score, slow-brewing tension from Dorothy's delicate approach is blown apart by the ensuing screeching of multiple heads, not to mention being chased by a headless body. The whole sequence is terrifying as an adult, but it's horrifying and out of place in a kid's film, which is why it scars you for life. Nice choice. All right, let's see. Let's go to the phones here. Let's see. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
So I have a scene that scared me and a scene that terrorized or traumatized me as a kid.
Okay.
The scene that scared me as a kid was the scene in the movie Salem's Lot. I saw it. I remember seeing it on TV when it first came out, and the scene was where there was a little boy that had became a vampire.
He's floating outside. I know exactly what you're talking about. He's floating outside the window, scratching on the window.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That scared me so bad.
Yeah.
And I recently bought it on DVD, and I was okay to watch it this time.
Yeah, no, I was young when that aired on TV, and it freaked me out, too. I just remember just a kid floating outside the window, scratching on the kid's bedroom window. I think that's
this creepy smile,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, I think that's a common one for people. I do. I think that people completely freaked out at that scene for sure.
And the scene that traumatized me, oh my goodness, I had to it freaked me out when the movie Apocalypse Now first came out on VHS. I remember watching it, and the scene where a very young Lawrence Fishburne is on this boat, and they're going down some river, and Lawrence Fishburne's playing a cassette tape that his mom that he received in the mail,
right?
And the guys were making fun of him and everything, and it was all quiet, and then they come under siege and under fire and they're firing back, and after everything's said and done, Lawrence Fishburne's blown away and everything else. And the only thing that's left speaking is the tape recorder.
Right, right.
That he got from his mom.
Right.
That freaked me. That traumatized me.
Yeah, I can understand. I can understand that. There's a lot of weird stuff in Apocalypse Now. All right, Dave, thanks for the call. Here's Bruce on WGN. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Nick, how you doing, buddy?
All right, what's up?
Hey, Superman 2. When I was a kid, towards the end of the movie, he's like fighting with his dark side in a junkyard.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that drove me nuts. I couldn't watch it. I was scared. And I don't know. It tore me to pieces. I couldn't understand why he was being so mean to himself.
Yeah.
When I was a kid. So,
I can understand that. All right, Bruce, thank you.
Yeah, buddy.
All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Michael on WGN. Michael?
Hey, Nick. Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's going on?
I got two of them. First one is the day after with Jason Robards and Steve Guttenberg.
Yep.
When they all of the bodies start decaying after the bomb was dropped.
Right.
And then the other one, which is a lot of people's, is the original Halloween, where you hear the music going. I would see that mask after I saw the movie. I would see that mask anywhere and everywhere, thinking that was what was that was somebody coming out after me.
Yeah. All right. Sounds like you got you're in a dryer, Michael. But thanks for the call. Thanks for the call.
Live from the laundry room.
Wow. Also, Halloween is a traumatizing movie for a lot of people. It scared me, too. Yeah. Scared me, too. The image of the actress laying on the bed with the Judith Myers tombstone above her. It's a really great, scary image. And the way it's revealed is really great. So, but of course, you know, Halloween is the best. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Good morning, Dick.
Morning.
The movie that scared me was The Body Snatchers.
Okay, which one, John?
I don't know. I don't remember. I literally made a couple of my the original one.
Okay.
They got these pods, these big pods that take over your body when you fall asleep.
Right.
I see that movie. I could not go to sleep. I was afraid of while asleep.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. The invasion of the body snatchers. That's because it's a real. It's also one of the great things about Nightmare on Elm Street, the original at least. It's such a primal thing to be afraid to go to sleep, because it's something you have to do, and it's something that everybody does, and to have yourself traumatized into not wanting to go to sleep because you're going to get attacked. That's one of the reasons why the first Nightmare on Elm Street is so good, and one of the reasons why the Invasion of the Body Snatchers, all of them, are good, because it preys upon everybody's got to sleep. You got to go to sleep sometime.
Yeah, and that idea that you might wake up is not you.
Yeah, John. You know, I like the Nightmare on Elm Street series, as we've talked about before, got sillier and sillier, and it was mostly about interesting makeup effects and how to kill somebody. But I like, I like all the Nightmare movies except for the second one.
You don't like Freddy's Revenge?
The second one.
That's the Nightmare on Elm Street 2 where it's got, oh God, I can't even remember his name. It's like Mark, I think
the
it's
kid
Mark
who
Penn.
Played the lead. I hated that movie.
I love it.
I hated that movie. I like the third, the third one was pretty cool.
Yeah.
The fourth one is one of my favorites. Rennie Harlan directed that one.
Is that the one where one of them gets turned into a giant bug?
It turns into a cockroach. Yeah, she's in a Roach Motel.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That girl, by the way, was at Flashback this year.
Yeah. Yeah, she was.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's take a quick break. And we've got this article here in front of me from the editorial department at Rotten Tomatoes, where the critics chose movie scenes from childhood that scarred them for life. And that's what we're talking about here on this Halloween Eve. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 if you want to join us. Coming up after 4:30, after the 4:30 news, we'll play another round of Know Your Onion. Know Your Onion. So there we go. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back after I break here for some weather.
Tell me again so I'll know what's happening in there. What's going on in the show? What was it you wanted? Could you say it again? I'll be back in a minute. You can get it together by then.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Coming up after the 4:30 news, we're going to play a round of Know Your Onion. And so we're going to need two callers, and the first two callers through during the 4:30 news will be our two contestants. They will each play a solo round. Tom will read them a news headline, and you have to guess whether it is a real headline or the Onion. All right, Wildcard Wednesday. Who requested that?
So that's coming to us from our pal Rasco, and that was Willie Nelson. What was it you wanted?
All right, there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. We are talking about movie scenes from your childhood that scarred you for life. 312-981-7200 if you want to join us via talk or text. So by way of introduction to this piece that I have in front of me from the editorial staff of RottenTomatoes.com, when you're a kid, every movie is a transporting experience, like peeking in a keyhole at some new reality beyond. You feel the fun, the joy, the wonder, and sometimes the shattering terror. The monsters you had imagined creeping the corners of your mind or darkened bedrooms proud full of horror on the screen, the awful, awe-inspiring power of witnessing something frightening can reverberate for decades. So in the spirit of Halloween, we asked 12 tomato meter-approved critics to tell us about the movie scenes they watched as children that scarred them for life. So our first one is Mark Harris, and it's from the movie Black Christmas, which is a really scary movie. Very, very scary movie and a very influential movie. The scene is when the killer gives our final girl the evil eye. The climactic scare in this groundbreaking slasher movie is really the culmination of a series of scares that assault the senses, beginning with the panicky moment when the police call college student Jess to reveal that the shrieking, barely human, obscene phone calls to her sorority house have been coming from inside the house. Then there's her nerve-wracking decision to employ horror victim logic and venture upstairs to check on her sleeping or dead friends rather than heading out the front door. And when she enters the bedroom to find her deceased sorority sisters, the sight of the killer's rabid, maniacal eyeball peering through the crack in the door as he whispers, "Don't you tell what we did, is the stuff of nightmares. This is one of the first horror movies that drew me into the genre as a kid and made me appreciate the power of fright. And after seeing it, I understood why people would want to dream of a white Christmas. That was from Mark Harris, who freaked out at that scene. And it's a freaky scene. There's no question about it. I can understand seeing that as a kid. I saw it as a kid. Freaked me out. All right, how about this? From E.T., E.T. is dying. Easily, the most horrific visual I have had seared into my brain involves E.T. when he's sick. He's scary enough as is, and once his skin turns papery white and blotchy, he looks like a diseased liver stretched over a child-sized nightmare. I'll take It or Chucky over E.T. any day. So E.T. freaked out. Sick E.T.
I think E.T.'s freaky. Not a happy looking alien. He's weird looking. He looks wrinkled and just sad.
414 area code says, I remember being in the theater when the trailer for Scanners came on the screen. The guy's head exploding completely traumatized and unexpected me and absolutely traumatized a 9-year-old me. I couldn't imagine why anyone would want to see that movie. They put the head exploding in the trailer for Scanners?
It's kind of the big draw. That's like the one thing most people know about that movie. It said it's got the head exploding.
All right. 847 area code says the officer's face in Janet Leigh's car window in Psycho. 815 area code says the original Haunting with Claire Bloom when the two women are in the bedroom and the pounding occurs on the door, ending where it seems to be the door is breathing and about to cave in. Yeah, The Haunting. That's a scary movie. All right, here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Nick, you were not alive yet when I saw this movie, but it was on WGN, and it was about some aliens coming to Earth and then building an underground laboratory and then taking the parents underground and sticking a really long needle into them, right into their neck.
Mm.
That and it was on WGN, I know that, because that's the only station that showed all that,
yeah,
all that spooky stuff. Doesn't ring a bell to you, does it?
No. If we leave it out there, maybe somebody will know. They can call in and or text
us. All I know is, as a little kid, maybe 5 years old, that terrified, you know.
Yeah.
And then anytime my parents or anyone would say, "We need to dig a hole," I went, "No."
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe somebody will know. Robert, leave the radio on.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Take care, buddy. All right. Let's see. Here is Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Nick. It's a TV one, but I know I was under 10 years old doing my homework watching Twilight Zone, and it was the one with the doctors were doing plastic surgery on this lady who was supposed to be so ugly.
Right.
And they finally took the bandages off towards the end, and it worked. She's a beautiful young blonde, and the people took off. They turned the camera on all the people, and they were all deformed and ugly. Super ugly, and that just freaked me out.
Yeah, no, that's one of the most. That's probably one of the most classic episodes of Twilight Zone ever. Is that because the image of the doctors and the nurses is always used when anybody talks about it.
Yeah, it set me back.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Thanks for the call.
Yep. Okay. Bye.
Right, take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Another person who writes for Rotten Tomatoes. Says The Exorcism of Emily Rose, and it's the scene that's in the barn. I was 11 when The Exorcism of Emily Rose was released in September of 2005. I remember a friend of mine talking about it, mentioning how she had seen it in theaters that weekend. My exposure to the horror genre was pretty much non-existent at that point, so perhaps Emily Rose was the first of the genre that I had ever seen. Needless to say, it ruined my life. Now scared of sleeping in the darkness of my own in my own bedroom, I slept on the floor of my mom's. This lasted for quite some time, maybe a year, which resulted in me having to see a therapist. The scene that scarred me the most is definitely the barn scene. I remember it vividly. Emily, possessed, is growling, screaming in tongues, flailing her arms, and looking upon Father Moore with blackened eyes. Father Moore is commanding the demon inside Emily to say its name, but there isn't one demon. There were six. "We are the ones who dwell within," they say, as they begin to state their names, with actress Jennifer Carpenter using a different tone and language for each. Cain, Nero, Judas, Legion, Belial, and Lucifer. When she says Lucifer, it's particularly frightening, as a faint light flickers in her eyes, the eyes of an animal peering at you through the dark. That's Sarah Clements, who was traumatized by the exorcism of Emily Rose. Oh, man. How about this? Megan Navarro, who also writes reviews for Rotten Tomatoes, says Ghostbusters freaked her out. Quiet in the library, the scene in the library freaks her out. Ghostbusters might be a definitive comedy classic, but the ghostly librarian is the stuff of nightmares. At least it was for me as a child. The dark, maze-like rows of bookshelves and eerie quiet was atmospheric enough. Even more so when the books and index cards moved on their own accord, but there was no mentally preparing for the ghastly wrath of the librarian. I screamed along with Peter, Ray, and Egon. Still to this day, I'm petrified to make even a peep when setting foot inside a library. That's pretty funny, getting traumatized by Ghostbusters. I could see that being kind of scary if you're a kid, you know? I mean, I was 19 when that movie came out, so I'd already seen everything. It didn't scare me. But I can see that freaking people out. So, all right. What scenes in movies freaked you out? We'll get back to this conversation in a little bit. Right now, though, we're going to break for the news, but we want to get our first two phone callers in here right now. Call 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Call right now, and our first two callers will be our two contestants for another round of Know Your Onion. That's where Tom is your host. He will read you some news headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or from the satirical newspaper The Onion, and prizes will be handed out. So, first two people in right now, 312-981-7200, you'll be our contestants for this morning's edition of Know Your Onion. 312-981-7200, call right now. News is coming up next. The last fire will rise behind those eyes. Black house will rock. Blind boys don't lie. All right, welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yep. 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Ike. It's from the Lost Boys soundtrack called Cry Little Sister.
Oh. God, I hate that movie so much. All right. We're here until 5, everybody. And we're going to get back to the conversation a little bit more about movie scenes that traumatized you as a kid. And we also have an unfortunate Blackhawks Express to play back from what was easily the worst game they've played all season so far. But we got to play it back. We play it back every morning. We play back the Express. So that's coming up. But right now we're going to jump to our contest here that we do every Wednesday morning. Tom is your host, and it is called Know Your Onion. And that's where Tom quizzes you by reading you news headlines, and you have to find out whether it's a real news headline or from The Onion, the satirical comedy news newspaper. So we've got two contestants holding on the line. Tom, are you ready to get the band in here?
Let's do it.
It's time to Know Your Onion.
Right. There it is. Know Your Onion, everybody. All right. So we've got two contestants. Let's go to our first one. This is Ron on WGN. Hi, Ron.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Morning. Good. You know The Onion?
Yes.
Okay, good. So he's going to give you, Tom's going to read you some news headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or The Onion. And if you get the majority of them correct, you win. It's that simple.
All right.
Okay. Go ahead, Tom.
All right, let's do this. Okay, Ron, your first headline here, since it is the Halloween season, creationist Ken Ham wants you to threaten kids with eternal hell on Halloween. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Oh, let's say that's real.
Let's see.
Excellent! That's real?
Yeah, you know who Ken Ham is.
Yes,
he's the guy that runs that creationist museum down in, what, like Kentucky?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, he wants to remind kids that Halloween celebrates the devil, and it
right.
might get you into hell.
There you go. All right, you got one right. Good start, Ron. Okay.
Good start.
All right.
All right, let's go to a little entertainment news. Matt Damon begrudgingly accepts $50 in an eBay auction for the Martian cast and crew jacket. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's The Onion.
Let's see. Very good, Ron.
$50.
Hey, man, I think that's all it's probably worth.
All right, man, good job, Ron. You get another one right here. You got three straight. That means you win automatically.
Well, sweet.
All right.
All right, Ron.
Try it again.
Next headline here, let's see. Quickly over to the annals of science. Are 90% of giraffes gay, or have their loving looks been misunderstood? Is that real, or is that The Onion?
Let's say that's The Onion.
Let's see.
That's real.
That's a very real headline coming to us from The Guardian.
Yeah. I read that, and I thought, wow, okay, that's a good one. All right, Ron, one wrong. You're still in good shape. You got a couple more chances here.
All right, Ron, your next headline. The FBI declassifies J. Edgar Hoover's extensive file on the Munster family. Is that real, or is that The Onion?
Oh, man. Let's say it's real.
Let's see.
Oh, that's The Onion. That's The Onion. And the Munster family.
Yeah. Well, they were threats to national security.
Yeah. Okay, this is your last chance, Ron. You got to get this one right.
Okay.
All right. Here, let's go over to consumer news. Bounty unveils a new ultra-thin paper towel for more natural feeling when you're wiping up spills.
Is that real or is that the onion?
That's the onion.
I see. Very good.
Ah, yes. All right, all you right. pulled it out. You got it, Ron. Good. Congratulations.
All right,
you made it a little suspenseful there, but you ended up doing it. So you got yourself Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnatis.com. Congratulations, Ron. You got to hang on, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, stay on the line. Ron's hanging on. All right, are we ready for our next contestant?
Let's do it.
Okay. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Morning. Now, are you familiar with The Onion?
Never heard of it.
Well, it's a satirical newspaper. So, all right. Go ahead.
All right. John, your first headline. Bernie Sanders holds a secret campaign meeting with 15,000 working-class Democratic donors. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's The Onion.
Let's see.
Woo-hoo!
Very good, John.
Yeah.
Very good. Very secretive, those working-class people.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Good job. One right. Here we go.
All right. Here's one. This foundation will pay you $10,000 to move to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's real.
Well, let's see.
Excellent!
Very good.
All right. Two straight. All right, John, you get one more right. You're already a winner, so here we go.
All right, let's check this one. Consumer news, Kmart pulls an offensive children's bride costume after complaints it encourages child marriage. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's The Onion.
Oh, let's see. That's very real. Kmart in New Zealand.
That's real?
Yeah, got into a little bit of hot water. They had a child bride like costume. It was for kids. It was a bridal gown and train and everything.
Okay, that's a little weird. All right, John, you still got a chance here. Got one more, and you're a winner. So let's try it again.
All right, your next headline: Italy busts a mafia plastic recycling ring. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's real.
Let's see.
Woo-hoo! There you go.
Yeah.
Good job, John.
Thank you.
All right. Congratulations. You got yourself a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnatis.com. Hold the line, okay, John? Hang on.
Okay, thank you.
There we go. John's a winner. And you can be, too, next week at this time. So there it is. All right. We got to get all the information from our winners, take care of all of that. But our phone lines are open again if you want to jump in. And text lines are open at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're talking about scenes in movies that completely traumatized you in your childhood. 312-981-7200. For the next one... from people who write for Rotten Tomatoes. The next one that comes up is The Great Mouse Detective. Great Mouse Detective. And the scene was Fidget kidnaps Olivia. Raphael Motemayor says, an animated Sherlock Holmes-esque detective story starring a mouse is not something that instantly screams horror. But The Great Mouse Detective knows how to build a mystery and tense atmosphere, culminating in the terrifying scene where tiny little Olivia, who is also a mouse, finds herself drawn to a toy baby crib as ominous yet playful music builds up to a big reveal. Olivia approaches the crib, pulls on the cover to reveal an evil and scary bat that takes her for a hostage just as the music changes to resemble the screeches from the shower scene in Psycho. Jeez, I don't remember that. I don't remember that at all. I've only seen Great Mouse Detective once, and that was back in 1986. That sounds terrifying. That sounds like it could really, really scar a kid. And you know what? There are a lot of kids' movies and Disney movies and animated movies that have scarred people, like really scared them. And you know, a lot of the classic Disney animated movies, they at least have a couple of traumatizing things in them for sure that kids are always going to remember and be freaked out by. So I'm not surprised that The Great Mouse Detective scared these kids. All right, here's the next one from Jason Gorber, who writes for for the Rotten Tomatoes, Jaws, which is a movie that I know so many people have been scared by, and specific scenes that stand out that really scare you. But this was the head in the boat. I mean, this is one of the biggest jump scares in movie history. Here's what Jason says. He writes about the day I saw Jaws on VHS in my dad's apartment. I had spent the previous week convincing myself that I would be terrified. All the stories from its theatrical run talked about how audiences were fainting, and I was sure I was going to freak out. Well, the self-hypnotism worked. When Hooper goes underwater and the head pokes out from the bite in the boat, I remember practically vomiting in fear. For a month afterwards, I was terrified of any water, even my morning shower. I was convinced the shark would come out of the spout and attack me. Summer vacations in the east coast of Canada, where I learned to swim, had some of the murky salt water as Amity Island, and I'd look out convinced I'd see the dorsal coming my way. Yeah, it Jaws scares people to this day. Scares people. So, all right, let's take a break here. I'll give you some weather, and then we've got a Blackhawks Express, and then we'll wrap up the show and this topic: movie scenes that traumatized you as a child. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll do some weather. We got a Blackhawks Express, and then we'll come back.
Chicago Blackhawks' first stop on a four-game Western swing is here in the Music City as they invade Nashville for the first time this season and take on the Predators, who have owned the Hawks here in this building in recent seasons. For the Hawks to change that trend, they're going to need more of what they did on Sunday night at the United Center. A complete game, lots of shots, and great goaltending. We're underway in the Hawks' zone. As the Predators gain control, Johansson will sweep the head of 2-on-1 for the Preds into the Hawk zone. Right circle, Ekholm fires. Big save by Leonard. The rebound, and Yarncroke fires. And that was knocked away by Leonard. May have hit the post as well. Grimaldi backing up to the left point. Moves it across right point to Josi. Josi and DeBrincat get their sticks tied up on the puck. Smith came out with a puck to Grimaldi. Top of the left circle. Shoots. Kick save. Leonard. Rebound. They score. It's Nick Bonino, great net presence there by the Predators. And a relentless attack ends up with second and third chances. And finally, they were able to cash in. They lead 1-0.
Craig Smith in the left corner. Fed it out to the right point. Long shot by Favreau. Turned wide by Leonard. And then a follow-up shot. They score. And it's Bonino again. Nick Bonino positioned perfectly again. He did it that way on the first goal, and he was positioned perfectly on the second goal. Picks up the garbage, shovels it home. It's 2-0 Nashville. Smith takes the puck to the line, gave it to Irwin. He blasts one from the right point. That sails well wide of the net. Puck against the far board. Smith has it. Smith to the left circle. The high slot. Grimaldi shoots. They score. It was Grimaldi's shot that was initially stopped by Robin Leonard. And guess who's on the doorstep? It's Nick Bonino with his hat trick. 3-0 in favor of Nashville. Very effective. That line, very effective for Nashville here tonight.
They're just throwing pucks at the front of the net.
5 seconds left. Duchesne with the puck behind the Hawk net. He leaves it back there. Modest got it in time. Winds off the clock. And the Predators finish business here, shutting out the Blackhawks 3-0. So it's the second time in 3 games that the Blackhawks have been shut out. For Pecorine, career shutout number 57, the third of his career against the Blackhawks. 3-0, the final score, the final shots of the game. 51 for the Predators, 220 for the Hawks.
Worst game of the season, that question. And it definitely wasn't Robin Leonard's fault. There was no defense. They owe him a Coke for the work he did. Made 48 stops. 51 shots on goal. Terrible. Hawks play again. They play the Kings on Saturday night. It's a late start, obviously, because they're going to be in L.A. It's a 9:30 start puck drop. So make sure you tune in right here on 720 WGN, where you hear all the Blackhawks action. And they'll get it together. I have faith in my boys. So there we go. Coming up at 5 o'clock is... Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. But right now we're talking about scenes from movies that, as a child, completely traumatized you. 312-981-7200. Here is Andrew on WGN. Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, hi. This scene was from the movie... That's
yes.
The title.
Yes.
It's a repeat of... yeah, about a mad scientist who changes his interns into snakes.
Right.
And it stars Dirk Benedict.
Right.
Of yeah, okay. Anyway, this
and the
scene
and the great Strother Martin.
Yes, yes. He was the scientist.
That's right.
Anyway, yes. The scene is at the carnival where the previous intern tried to turn him into a steak, but something went wrong and he's half steak, half man.
Right.
And then the girlfriend comes in that room where they have all the freaks, and to her horror, she suddenly realizes that this creature, half man, half steak, is the former intern.
Right.
And that freaked me out.
Yeah.
Especially when he starts flapping what used to be his arms.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene resonated. I saw it in middle school,
yeah.
And it's still, yeah.
Okay. All right, Andrew. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
All right. You ever see the movie?
I did after we talked about it at some point over the last few months. It got brought up, and I went and watched it. I was like, this is amazing.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, you got to give it to the title alone.
Yeah.
Communicates everything you need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. 571 area code says, this is from G in D.C. Great show. I listen every morning. Thank you. It says, when I was 12, I saw the Blair Witch Project in the theater. Prior to seeing the film, I had read the website and watched the interviews they had done with the residents of the area. It all seemed so real. I didn't realize until years later that it was simply all part of the show. I quit Boy Scouts and camping immediately after watching that movie. I can understand that. I can understand that. I don't enjoy camping. I'm not an outdoorsy guy. Mm. You know, for me, roughing it is no air conditioner in the hotel room. That's roughing it. So I'm
roughing
not
it at the Marriott.
not into that kind of stuff at all. Hey, let's go hiking. No. No. But yeah, I can understand trying to give up camping after watching Blair Witch. Stacy said, I was traumatized by The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Wow. I saw it in the theater, and I remember actually crying. The whole movie disturbed me so much. I haven't been able to watch movies that deal with the supernatural, demons, or ghosts since. Wow, that movie really scared some people. I remember liking it. I don't remember it being terrifying. I remember it was like The Exorcist meets Law and Order. That's what I remember about it. Because it was like an exorcism movie, but also a courtroom drama. 815 area code says, the end of Texas Chainsaw showing boots of the killer at the unemployment office line? What is that?
Yeah, I don't remember that part.
That's not the end of Texas Chainsaw. The end of Texas Chainsaw is Marilyn Burns getting picked up by the truck.
And she's just like cackling.
And she's
like
cackling
crazy.
Like a maniac. And then you see one of the most beautiful final shots in movie history is Leatherface dancing with that chainsaw in the sunrise. One of the greatest movie images, in my opinion, one of the greatest movie images of all time. I love that final shot. I love it so much. It's so beautiful. I don't remember the boots in the unemployment office line. So, all right. Jonathan Barkin, who writes for Rotten Tomatoes, says, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. My first experience with a Nightmare on Elm Street franchise was flipping through the channels on TV and landing upon this scene of Joey's aquatic demise. I was too young to watch a nightmare film, but also old enough to be fascinated by the mystique and terror surrounding them. Watching Freddy manipulate Joey and then burst through the bed made an indelible effect on me. It was my first experience with a horror movie and the terror it elicited, and was a foundation upon which was my love for the genre was built. Lewis Knight says that The Others, what a terrific movie, by the way. One of the best ghost movies, one of the really creepiest and best ghost movies ever. It's Nicole Kidman. The scene was the face behind the veil. The scene where Grace, played by Nicole Kidman, interrupts her daughter Anne playing with toys while her head is obscured by a veil. Then we see the withered, elderly face staring back from beneath the sheet. It left me traumatized for nights afterwards. I didn't look at curtains or any kind of hanging fabric the same way after that. The mixture of youthful innocence with the complete opposite end of the human life cycle was just an unsettling union for me. Kate Sanchez says, Pet Sematary. Pet Sematary confronts death and explores grief in ways I just wasn't used to, given my identity and culture, and it wasn't necessarily afraid of it. But while there was many scenes in that film to rewatch for me, the Achilles tendon scene and the fact that the scene that affected me the most as a child, hiding under a bed, a reanimated Gage slices Judd's Achilles tendon as he approaches. You can see the deep wound in Judd's ankle split in detail as he falls. I didn't sleep for months. They recreated that scene in the remake, too, with John Lithgow.
Well, they just had to.
Yeah. Okay, how about The Shining? They chose the woman in the bathroom. I refused to take a bath for a week when I was seven. My father let me watch Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. Oh, my God. When Jack Nicholson walks into that lime-green bathroom, only to find the decrepit, rotting ghoul of an elderly woman cackling at him after he danced with and kissed her younger specter. I leapt as high as her laugh, and I haven't come down since. Well, there you go. Those are some scenes that traumatized you. Enjoy your Halloween movies. Okay, hey, tomorrow on the show, Dan Feinberg is going to join us for his bi-weekly visit, and it's the Halloween Spooktacular. So we'll do some scary stuff. All right, news coming up after this.